Welcome back to a final 8-4 play podcast for 2017. I am your host, called in to rescue this pile of
hot off the airplane.
Yes, yes. Thank you for finishing that sentence for me.
Limoed from the tarmac, straight here.
That's right. Markeem Jesus McDonald here to talk about Japan and games and Japanese games. We have cobbled together like a ragtag group that, like any great action movie, is going to end up being way more awesome than it has any right to be. That's not a judgment against any of
this
you
is,
individually.
I think this is where Kyle and I die together on the beach and that planet as the thing blows up. Fort.
You have glasses on, so you probably die before I do.
That's true.
Don't skip ahead to the Last Jedi conversation too early. So yes, we have a series of non-regulars here, irregulars, if you will, but regular enough to be called irregulars, I think. That's your guys...
Fairly regular.
Okay. That's our name. That's our action movie name. The irregulars. We're here to irregulate.
It's our asylum film label here.
Sure.
The irregulators.
Exactly. Starting with, on the knobs and buttons, hopefully, which are all pressed correctly.
I pressed a lot of knobs, and I turned a lot of buttons.
But if not, please address your complaints to one Mr. Django in case of emergency break glass air gun. How you doing?
I'm feeling a little bit of the butterflies right now because I have no idea what's going on.
It's been a while since you've been here as well, right?
That was a very nostalgic walk from Shibuya Station to come back here.
When is the last time you were on the podcast? Do you remember?
No.
You don't know like how many days, hours,
all,
minutes?
It was
it's
all
been?
A blur.
No?
I just like I woke
You're
up.
Not keeping track?
I woke up and I was here.
There are like scratch marks on the wall. You're like in prison or whatever. Like the days go by.
Ex-intern Django, what have you been up to? How did your where did your life take you to the launch pad? That was the 8-4 internship.
I skyrocketed into the smartphone game industry, Mark, in Japan, which was, it's been a trip.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge industry, and I'm coming at it from, I use some of the, you know, localization skills I picked up here, as well as just general how to make things not suck skills. And
you're doing, like, troubleshooting, customer service, a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, localization, English, you know, just making the Japanese version as good as it possibly can be in English. And then as well as that, through John, connections of connections, I've also managed to get myself into the New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
nice.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow. Oh, shit. Well, we can talk about something about that. But before we get off the other thing, before we get off the customer service, are you getting Japanese game problems from Japanese language users? Are you getting English game problems from Japanese? What is the use case?
I do work with the foreign version, which is obviously the English version of a Japanese game.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I deal with the foreign users in English and then translate it back to the development team, who's Japanese.
Number one most annoying thing that you get.
I lost my phone. Please give me my account back. And there's a lot of times not as easy a way as people think.
Really?
Yeah, because I mean, if I don't have your ID number and all you give me is like your name, which can be changed at any time.
Right.
I need like a list of all the characters you've ever owned, like shit that people never remember.
Wait, you can that you seriously use that shit?
Well, I mean,
you like prove that it's yours by telling.
And people, obviously, this is like free smartphone games. They don't always buy stuff, so they don't always have a receipt that I can tie all this stuff to. So,
well, who the fuck keeps track of, like, you know, I mean, besides John and Darb here, who the hell keeps track of every, you know, Pokemon that they unlock?
Exactly.
We can't just look at the Twitter feed like we can for certain people.
That's why, Mark.
Piece it together.
Let me make this a PSA to the world.
Yeah.
Take screenshots of your shit, guys. In smartphone games, you never know.
Of, like, your roster?
Yeah, your roster.
ID number, at least.
At least, oh, yeah.
It seems so fakeable to me, though.
What good are screenshots if you lose your phone with your screenshots on them?
Yeah.
Like, you gotta take screenshots
with iCloud backup.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Back that shit up.
Back it up.
Speaking of backing that shit up.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Monster of the Dance Floor. That is Kyle Yippee-Ki-Yay, motherfucker, McLean.
Very good.
Merry Christmas.
I cannot begin to tell you. Okay, my last name is McLean.
Yes.
And I've been in Japan for a long time. I went to college here. I did job hunting here. Every interview I walked in when I was in college, like, my name's Kyle McLean. They're like, you mean like in Die Hard? Kyle McLean, where are you from?
I'm gonna from just say if you were – In America, I think you might get the same thing.
Really?
I think you're going to get the same thing. Yeah,
it's about as recognizable like as if your name was Mr. T or something. Like, and,
like, well, then they'd go, Kyle MacLean, where are you from in America? Said, I'm from Indiana. Like, Indiana Jones? You're like okay. Every action
that part
ever.
You're not going to get in America.
Yeah. You got to say, I'm from the Nakatomi, whatever it's called.
Nakatomi Plaza. Yeah.
Although in Japan, Indiana Jones is not called Indiana Jones. He's called Indy Jones.
Oh, shit. Very interesting.
The more you know.
We named the dog Indiana.
They still put it together with Indy. They're in Indiana.
Drink.
Was PSX at the Nakatomi Plaza building?
No.
I saw a lot of people tweeting that convention center or whatever it is. Maybe it's a hotel.
No. There were people at PSX who went to a meeting at the Nakatomi Plaza building.
Okay, they went to a meeting there.
Yes,
okay.
There is a...
I thought they might have had, like, they added a convention hall or something. This is, what's it, an office? It's a real office building,
yeah,
right?
It's a real office
or
building,
like,
yeah.
A hotel or
it's
something?
It's not called Nakatomi Tower.
No, it's not.
That would be amazing.
Damn it, we could have let this podcast having totally convinced Kyle that there was a Nakatomi Plaza.
They need to do, because, like, okay, you know, we're just coming off Christmas. My, like, Facebook feed, it was more like Happy Die Hard Day than it was Merry Christmas post.
I feel like the ironic, like, comedy that comes from my favorite Christmas movie isn't A Christmas Story or How the Grinch Stole. It's Die Hard, because it's a Christmas movie. Like, look, we saw people that had that laugh 3 years ago.
That's fine. Oh, yeah.
It's getting bigger, though.
3 years ago, it was a thing where I was like, oh, yeah, that was a Christmas. That did take place at Christmas. Ha ha. Move on with your life. No, you're right. It's like
every year.
And there's people who think that it's a new, clever, like, hilarious thing. It's not.
No. And nobody mentions Die Hard 2, which also takes place on Christmas.
It is.
not as great of a movie.
I didn't remember that either. I kind of forgot about Die Hard 2, but Die Hard 1 is a classic Christmas tale.
Let's see. Also joining us, pouring some very festive Maker's Mark, John Restar, Ricciardi.
Restar, that's not what I said. I said Ristar.
Whatever. Close enough.
You say Ristar, I say Restar.
It's not Ristar, which is the proper pronunciation of a shitty, probably shitty, I'm going to assume shitty
I like
Genesis
game
that nobody kind of cares about.
I enjoyed it.
It's all right.
I'm kidding. I know of its existence for some reason, so it must be somewhat decent.
I learned about it from Die Hard Game Fan, as you did most of the interesting Genesis games back in the day, because no one else covered that shit.
That is true.
That was a great magazine. That was my favorite magazine back in the day, Die Hard Game Fan.
There was a period of time.
You realize you're on this podcast with, right?
Yeah.
People who happened to work for magazines back in the day.
No, but
actually, it was my favorite magazine, too, for a while.
The mantle of great console gaming magazines in America passed many times, and for a time it was indeed definitely unquestionably at Die Hard Game Fan. Like, the reviews were super shitty, completely untrustworthy always, but their import coverage,
the drug induced review,
their import coverage was amazing. We podcast about that at some point, but it definitely, you know, Next Gen had it for a while and then lost it. EGM definitely had it for a long time while I was there. And maybe a couple months when John was there. But enough of that bullshit. Rounding out the cast, the anchor, that is Brad Brantaclaus Douglas.
Brantaclaus.
You brought gifts for all the boys and girls.
Well, I didn't this time.
I mean, that was good enough. Yeah, you were coming again even closer to Christmas.
Yeah, I could have.
There was like a second wave of Brantaclaus.
Well, it would have been the sort of the B tier. Would have been like it would have been firefighting airport simulator edition.
Which is fucking awesome, and I love that those games. It's only through you that I even know those games are getting made.
I'm seriously, like, my New Year's Day plan is to pick all those games up and just play every single one of them, even if only it's for like 30 minutes or an hour, because I can't even imagine what kind of a game it is. I don't even know.
I really want to know too. And you're gonna find this amazing fucking the next PUBG is like firefighter whatever simulator 2000 or whatever.
I mean, there must be people that love them, I'm sure.
What there is I'm assuming that's what this is, because even when I worked on like official PlayStation magazine, and it was like, okay, every single game that comes out, let's fucking cover it or at least be knowledgeable of it. Then you'd go to Walmart at Christmas time and you'd just be like checking out in the game section, and there would be like, what the fuck, like big game hunter, like 2005 or something like that. Like, what, like, I never even heard of this game, and like tons of those games that are just made. I'm curious if this is one of those like $10 specials, but
it
like,
has the same like visual aesthetic, at least from the cover, as like the Euro Truckers and the like. So I feel like it must be the same company because literally the logos look almost exactly the same,
right?
Unless Euro Trucker is so big, there's a company that sprouted up that rips them off and makes other games. I mean, that's possible. I don't know.
But there are these games on Steam that pop up every once in a while, especially if you like look at Steam Spy religiously, like I have been recently. It's like, you know, this like Russian like big truck game or something, and all you do is like drive big ass. I mean, like not even like a truck that someone would buy, but like a truck that all it's meant to do is move tractors or something.
Yeah.
And it's whoa, let's move this thing through the mud or whatever. And it's like, like some people are just like, fuck, it's so dirty, and those tires are so huge. Some people are really fucking into that. It's like a whole separate subculture. So speaking of weird, dirty subcultures, what are we going to dive into this week, this fortnight?
This special holiday episode, end of the year.
Yes. I have something I'd like to start. People just, like, think of your own topics. We'll talk on some games. I know we're going to hit versus Super Mario Brothers. Maybe a little hit on some games that people have been catching up on. Over the break, I want to talk a little bit about the Resident Evil 7 DLC.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you play through it?
Did
you bring your PS4 on your trip? Because you were gone for like 3 weeks.
I was gone for 3 weeks. I did not, even though Destiny 2 expansion launched like the day that I left.
Oh, wow.
Which is monumentally bad timing. And then the following week that DLC came out.
Also, so you totally missed...
I played enough of it, though. I'll talk
about it. You
totally
missed the Monster Hunter beta then, both of them.
I completely missed the Monster Hunter beta. Man. So I had to, experience that vicariously through the internet, which I was very happy to see people talking about
it's
gonna
be big.
A lot. Yeah. Even on this podcast. Oh, I remember something from the last podcast. There's a couple things that I need to, like, fix.
Okay.
All right. There's something in the game called skid marks. Is that correct? Okay. That's the actual name in the game for it. Skid marks. SKIDMARKS.
Yes.
Okay. And these are the things that lead you to where the monster is.
This is a bad question for me because I'm not super knowledgeable. It's one of the things.
It's one of the things that will lead you.
Yes. It's one of the insect follow things.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not like the monster's underwear is on the floor.
That would be more appropriate.
I might not be as upset about it.
If the monster left, like, it's wiped its ass on leaves or something, and that's how
Maybe that's what it is. The monster, like, dragged its ass along the ground.
I mean, animals do that, right?
So they do.
Maybe that's what it is.
Skid marks? Like, there's only two things that you can think of with skid marks, and neither one are appropriate to fucking, like, medieval Monster Hunter world. Yeah. That's fucking awful. Come on.
I don't know. Maybe they'll throw a motorcycle in there like Zelda later on. You know? I mean, who knows?
Oh, shots fired. Yeah, I am curious. I had to skip through the Zelda DLC talk in the last episode because I didn't want any spoilers at all. But just tell me, how many people here have played the DLC?
I have not.
You have not?
Not yet, no.
Wow. Okay, surprising.
I have not.
I have not.
Okay, so only you, Kyle.
Yeah.
All right. So I can't really trust what you say because you're going to love everything. But does it feel weird? Does it feel shoehorned in? Does it feel appropriate? Did they somehow make it seem...
Are you talking about the bike?
Like, would you ask? See, I've not got the bike yet.
You have to finish it to get the bike.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of stuff you have to fulfill before you can get the motorcycle.
If you have to clear it and then you get the bike, then what's the point of the bike?
The bike just makes exploring the world, like, super fun.
But you've already finished it, right?
Well, there's no really finishing that game. You finish the DLC story, but I mean, there's still
you're not going
to have to explore the whole map.
If you're a completionist, then this will make getting
so this
places
is the fastest
better.
Way to get around. And you can go up mountains with it and shit, and like, and we talked about this a little bit, but they have a story reason for it. Like, it's not like it's just like, oh, here's a stupid bike that makes no sense. Like Link is the one guy who didn't have a whatever they call it, a familiar.
I mean, there's that's a story reason, but it doesn't mean it's not stupid or anything like that. I mean, like,
it's not stupid. It's like it landed in a meteor or something.
Right.
It's like, okay, okay, that makes sense, like, story-wise, what it's doing there.
Bill and Ted show up in a phone booth.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not going to judge. I am excited.
It does look super fun. I watched some video of it, though. It looks really, really... Like, I want it, but I just don't know if I want to deal with the DLC right now, because, like, I didn't like the story in that game, so, like, to have to do story stuff now just sounds kind of like a chore.
I'm glad they're adding stuff like that, though.
I do want to play it. I mean, like, I enjoyed playing the game. So, I mean, I want to play it. Yeah. Not to get the bike. I just want to play more of the game. But.
Right. Okay, well, so what I was originally going to go into was a segment. We need to come up with a name for it. JJ's not here, but maybe, like, Tales from America. or, like, I want a name for this. The problem with this is it only happens around the holidays, but, like, you know, when you get around, like, extended family members and people who, like, they know you work in video games, so they're going to, like, pull whatever they've heard from the past year that has anything to do with video games,
right,
and throw it at you. And I love it because you get, like, an idea of what the quote-unquote normal people hear about video games.
Yeah, yeah.
And so these is my, like, completely 100% anecdotal takeaways from what I heard. But so, for example, Star Wars Battlefront 2, that story got out there about the loot box things because people didn't even know that it was tied to loot boxes or what was the problem with it or whatever. They just knew that there was some shitty thing about the game. It was just like, oh yeah, it's that Star Wars, the two game. Like, no. Yeah. I heard all the bad stuff about that game. We didn't pick that up. Or another cousin, like, got it, or a nephew got it for Christmas finally, but didn't pick it up when it came out because they'd heard, like, bad stuff about it.
Oh really?
Yeah. So that was an example. Huh. Another example is, Fortnite is absolutely, I'm going to say eating PUBG's lunch. And when I say that, what I mean is, of course, nobody's eating PUBG's lunch. PUBG is at, like, a fucking giant buffet. They're doing just fine. Nobody needs to fucking worry about PUBG. But I think no one will ever know how much more it would have gotten, because this happened, I was at a GameStop even, and I overheard people talking to this effect again. It was like, oh yeah, no, don't get PUBG. Get Fortnite. It's the same thing and it's free. Like, that is, like, the takeaway for the, like, twice removed from the game industry people just, like, that is the takeaway. And that's the, I guess, genius. I hate to call it genius of what Epic is doing with that game, but, like, they have effectively done it. Like, I'd seen those numbers that Fortnite was talking about, like, right when it came out, it was this big and blah, 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 blah. But I was like, really? Like, oh, I guess that's, like, you know, maybe that's, like, 30 million people in China that are playing. Like, nobody I know is playing that game. And it's like, yeah, nobody I know is playing the game. And I don't see my friends and industry people talking about it on Twitter. But everybody fucking else is. Like, everybody.
I will say that, like, apparently, a lot of people that I know who are in the industry and that kind of, you know, are, like, deep state people in the industry are, like, they're playing a shit ton of it.
They are.
Yeah.
And paying PUBG as well.
Well, it's kind of split. It, like, there's people who play PUBG. There's people who play Fortnite until they can get home to play PUBG.
Interesting.
And then there's people who don't have a gaming PC.
Right.
So they're only available. They're only playing Fortnite.
Therein lies the rub, right? Yeah. Which is, for example, if you have a PS4, like 80 million people. Or even if you have an Xbox and you don't want the, like, super shitty, like, bugged out piece of crap version that they've apparently put out.
Yeah.
Which people do, and it's still selling just on sheer force of that game, as, like, the zeitgeist is that strong about that game, is that, like, nothing is stopping that game. It's doing gangbusters. But if you are a little more knowledgeable, like, that use case does completely, totally make sense. I mean, beyond the free part, which is also fucking huge. Like, if you're in college or high school or grade school, even.
I mean, and also I think the thing is that, like, you know, what they did that was so smart was that they tuned it for a controller, and so it feels real. I play Fortnite on PS4 and it feels really great to play.
Yeah,
it's works perfect with a controller. Like,
and by all accounts, PUBG is still not, even on the PC, the controller is just not there yet.
Yeah,
like, it'll get there.
Sure,
it will get there. Of course it will. But you know, they got a priority list like a few million miles long.
Yeah.
But that was surprising to me, because it's like Xbox, Microsoft, you know what you guys are doing with first-person shooters. I mean, somebody does there. At least, you know, grab some guys from 343 and throw them on it. Like, this is the franchise. Like, this is your fucking hardware. This thing is going to move units. So I was surprised to see as many people complain about the controller controls on PUBG as I was. But you're right, that's another good aspect of that.
I mean, and I'm so used to playing it on keyboard and mouse that I can never imagine ever playing it with a controller.
Would you want to? It would feel so slow and whatever. It'd be like playing it in first person. I speaking of PUBG, heard something interesting. There's a the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, AIAS, the people who do the DICE Awards, they started a podcast. I don't know if you guys have heard of this.
I haven't listened to it yet, but I saw it started. Like, so, Cerny was on.
Ted Price hosted.
Ted Price, that's who I was thinking. Yeah,
and
so
they had Player Unknown as one of the, they had Neil Druckmann, a lot of really good interviews. There's only like four of them out right now. But one of them was
the Naughty Dog Brendan. PUBG squad is a bunch of cutthroat motherfuckers.
Oh, really?
Those guys do not fuck around.
That'll be interesting to see how that works into their multiplayer stuff, because those guys, I know people who swear by their multiplayer games.
Neil Druckmann, don't play.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
All right. Well, but in the Brendan Green, that's his name, right? Something like that, Player Unknown.
Yeah.
In his podcast, he talked about that the idea was for it to be in first person. Like, it was meant to be.
Well, there's a first person mode.
Well, right. And there is a first person mode, but it would be a first-person game, except that I think it was originally like an Arma mod.
Yeah.
And in Arma, it makes some, what is it? It makes some sound effect every time you do something in third person. And so that's why he was going to make it first person. It's a real bad anecdote, but it's interesting if you listen to the podcast. The takeaway here is go listen to that podcast so you can get the proper anecdote out of it. But yeah, anyway, he seemed like a really like down-to-earth guy, even though his life has got to be like completely fucking batshit insane. Seriously. Right now.
As the only person here who plays PUBG, I think.
Much longer. I'm going to get my my new PC. Tomorrow.
You don't
really?
Oh,
wow. Literally tomorrow?
Yeah, it has to be by the end of the year, so it's gonna be tax reasons.
It is one of the most incredible games I've ever played. Like, sucks away all the time I have from other games.
Right.
Because I think, like, do I want to go play this game where I don't know what's going to happen for the next 2 hours, and I don't know if it's going to be fun or not? Like, I don't think that deep about it, but, like, in the back of my mind, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Or I can go drop into PUBG and play 30 minutes, and I know it'll be fun. Like, it's never not fun.
And,
which is a weird... I've never had a game like that before that I've played that I've been that into. Like,
right. Yeah, I mean, it seems like, for a lot of people, like how we felt about Destiny, the first one, which is just like, it's like a lifestyle.
Yeah, almost. I thought you were going to say Quake.
I'm going to go on, sure, but that was Quake for me way back in the day. But like, I know these people are probably going to be on, these friends are going to be on, we're going to be either playing together or I'll just be chatting or whatever. But yeah, exactly. You're going to play the same thing. It's going to be a little bit different every time.
And I have never, like, I tweeted about it the other day. I got a solo chicken dinner other day.
Yeah.
And it, again, like, the most, like, adrenaline filled, like, I had to, like, step away from the computer, like, my heart was racing, my hands were shaking. It was like the most visceral emotional response I've ever had from a video game ever.
Wow. And how many solo chicken dinners is that for you?
That's like my third, I think.
Okay, all right.
I do better in solo than I do with groups, and I think it's because when I'm in a squad, I don't care because I think other people have my back.
Right.
So I don't have to like care as much and be
pressure's
as careful.
Not on as much.
Yeah, but when I'm by myself, like every single fucking step is like, do I go this way? Do I go that way? Like,
have you been playing the new map?
Yeah, the new map is...
Talk about the new map a little bit.
Fucking great.
Really?
Like, and the thing that's really great about the new map...
Desert, I guess?
Yeah, it's kind of like a desert, like, South American vibe kind of thing. I think the thing that's really great about the new map is because it's so huge. It's way bigger than the original map. So it's a long game. It's all about, like, spotting people from really far away. There's less...
Are you using rifles more?
There's more rifles, and there's less cover because you're in areas that are more spread out and more wide open, and there's more cities, so there's more windows, there's more buildings, there's more places that people can be hiding that could snipe you.
That's what, is there more verticality to it as
well? Yeah, the buildings are taller, there's the multiple-story buildings and stuff like that. So it makes it, like, it's really interesting to see a game like this where that's doing so well, and you really, I mean, like, at any developer could have been like, you know what, let's just make another map that plays just like the first game, the first map does, but just have it look different.
Right.
They actually thought about it and thought, like, let's try and make this map play completely differently from the first one. And it does.
Hmm.
And it you change the way you think. You change the way you fight. You change.
Are you learning more how to, like, because at farther distances, you have to really, like, account for bullet drift and whatever.
I mean, yeah, even in the original map, you had to do that as well. But, like, in this one, like, it's way more important. And then, right. You know, there's a couple of new weapons in there as well. There's, like this Winchester rifle and stuff like that. The sort of brilliant thing about that game is that all the weapons feel really different, and there's, like, you know, there's muzzle velocity and bullet drop and, like, all this stuff that you have to think about, like, am I using a 2x scope or I'm using a 8x scope and, like, all this stuff. And so it becomes like a lot of, I'm very bad at the long game, like, I'm really shitty at it, but, like, those moments when you hit those things, when you're like, I dropped in a game, first thing I picked up was a Winchester, walked outside, and there was a dude that was probably like 150 meters away from me, and pegged him 3 times and killed him with that like fucking, like, you know, old school. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I instantly got shot by some kid with a shotgun, you know, it was, you know, like, but, like, yeah, the new map feels very different. It plays very different. It looks great, you know.
So do you prefer now playing on the new map?
It's kind of like,
it depends on your mood.
I think they said something about there was a bug in the game that made it heavy, like, weight the new map more when you drop into a match. So, like,
wait, so you can't choose the map that you
drop into? You can't choose the map. And so it's random. But they said that, like, there's a bug that makes it so that you drop into the new map more often than the old map. It actually seems to work out kind of nicely, because I drop it in the new map and I don't know where to go, and I don't, like, know what the hot spots are. I don't know where the spots to avoid are.
Right.
So it's just all brand new.
Right.
And then about the time when I'm, like, getting frustrated with that, it seems to put me into the old map. I'm like, oh, okay, now I know where to go, what I should be doing, and, like, don't jump into school or don't jump into the military base or whatever, you know, like, that kind of stuff. Right. So it's even if it is a bug, it's tuned very well.
So what's your advice to us, like, especially me, PUBG newbies? I've heard actually, as a newbie, maybe do jump into the school or the military base or whatever, just because you're going to learn real
You'll
fast
die.
That way.
Yeah.
But you're going to learn, like, because you're going to encounter other people.
That is the best way to learn how to play the game, to get good, as the children would say.
Right.
is to
be good.
Drop into school or military base, because there's so many people drop in there and things get spicy, like, real quick.
Right.
And you'll die.
Right.
But you'll learn how to shoot.
And
that's the whole... And once you get confident at killing other people in the game, then the game changes completely. Because when I first started playing, I was very bad at it, and I was scared, and I didn't want to get killed, so I wouldn't try to... I would try to avoid people. Yeah. I would jump far away.
You camp.
And if I heard gunshots, I'm like, oh, shit, I'm not going that way. I'm going the other way. But now I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I hear gunshots. I'm like, no, let's go find those motherfuckers. Yeah, I want to kill those people. Like, they told me where they are.
Yeah.
So now it's time to kill them.
I think another interesting thing about that interview that I remember parts of was that they talked about valuing kills. And he said, you know, he doesn't want it to be... Because I just assumed that, like, kills were going to be rewarded so much that it was, like, that it was a huge part of the game or whatever. But he says that's not it. It's about winning. It's about being the last one.
Yep.
And so that's equal, might be equal parts, you know, hiding or strategy. It's like, strategy is huge, more so than just, like, the reflexes. And, I mean, killing is super important. He was saying it is very important, but he does not want to weight it ever so much that it's like, yeah, killing is the way that you are, like, really good at PUBG. Like, it should be strategy above all else, and killing is one tool in that, but, like, if that's all you have, like, you're not going to be as good.
I think there's probably, like, times in the general flow of a game, if you imagine a game is about 30 minutes long, there's probably times when strategically it makes sense to avoid people,
like
when you're first dropping in, you're gearing up, you're trying to get all the good loot. Like, it doesn't make sense to get into firefights because they could kill you just as easily as you can kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But once the circle starts closing and then there's only a very limited way for you to move, like, you have to get into that circle and you're on a vector towards it and everyone else is doing the same thing, then it becomes a point where there are people in your way and the best thing to do is just get them out of your way by killing them. And so that's when you start looking for, like, you hear gunshots. You're like, okay, I need to go find that guy.
Right.
Especially...
Right.
again, the one of the great things about the game is that all guns sound different. And if you're good enough, if you played the game long enough, you really know cool. what gun they're using. Yeah. So there's points when you're like, oh, okay, that guy's using, there's a guy over there using a sniper, so he's not in close quarters combat mode right now.
Right.
So let me go see if I can get him, get the jump on him or something like that.
That's when, yeah, that's when I love when you get to start getting into that level of a game. I mean, you mentioned Quake. Like, that's how Quake was back in the day, where we would, like, you know, there'd be part of a map where you would jump twice over lava or something. And so, you know, you'd jump twice when you weren't there, and just to make the other guy think that you were there. Right. And then you could get the drop on it. It becomes this just total psychological game.
Yep.
So, like, I know, you know, there's a thing in PUBG, right, with, like, leaving doors open or not, yep. right? It's just, like, to think someone's in there, or are they in? Did they yeah. do that because they want? They know that I know that they think that I think that they're yeah, in there, so. Or like the car pulled up, you know, by this. Is that a fucking trap? And somebody is like, well, anyway, like yep. that's what I'm. Anyway, I'm super excited to.
Yeah, I think
play more.
That's
to play any.
It is one of the. I mean, and again, the great thing about it is that even if you don't win, like, you know, you get killed, like, it's fun, and
right.
they. Sure. With the 1.0 release, they just released the replay mode, so that you can go back and replay an entire match from any person's perspective
that
in the match.
It's going to be huge.
And
yeah,
after I got my chicken dinner, at one point in the game, I kept getting shot by this guy as I was running across a field, and I didn't know where I was getting shot from. And I managed to get away from him, mm-hmm. and I healed up and continued on the match. And then after the game was over, I was like, I wonder who that was shooting at me and where he was.
Yeah.
So then I went back. I found that in the game. I saw that guy, and I'm like, oh, okay, I know where he was now. He actually was in my blind spot. I wouldn't have seen him otherwise. If he had been a better shot,
yeah.
he should have killed me, sure. but he's not good. And he ended up being the guy that I killed to win the game.
Oh, really? Wow. He was
yeah.
number two.
Yeah, yeah. And wow. I was like, okay, good. I'm glad I got you. If you could nice. Have won the game, if yeah. you had been a better shot.
Do the replays in 2D and 3D, do they have the overhead, like, map?
Yeah, you can view okay. it from the map, and you'll see the names okay. of everyone as they move around.
Right. I'm so excited for them to get really good. I think it's going to be evolving, but at broadcasting that yeah. game, like, that game is going to be, like, yeah, it's going to be, I think, even more amazing to spectate, like, really soon as
yeah.
known players get good, and as styles come out and people start, like, subverting whatever the like conventional wisdom is about the meta and stuff like that. Anyway,
so yeah, your Tales from America, I thought there was going to be something
Tales
about, like, how you know, anybody who works in the game industry, like, talks to a family member who, like, does it, and they're like, oh, you play video games all day, that must be really fun, like, that's what everybody
well,
thinks.
Well, that's a given, like, that
something.
Was that was, like, the first, you know, 5 years I was right. at EGM and OPM, which at least then it could be kind of like, well,
kind of,
I mean,
but not really.
I could see how you would think that, but yeah. But yeah, that was much more the case back then. But yeah, they have to move on to other stuff now. I'm trying to think if there was anything else that was the big, like, Fortnite was like, holy shit, that's the sixth time I've heard about that from somebody that doesn't even play that many, you know, video games at all. Yeah, I guess the other shit is just fucking, like, Bitcoin and blockchain shit.
God.
Yeah, that's which I don't think anybody anywhere on this planet needs me to mention.
That's even here. I was in the
yeah.
Cento.
Mark, can you tell me what exactly is Bitcoin?
I was in the Cento, like, the Japanese,
I got a
like,
YouTube video
public
for
bath,
you.
And there was, like, a bunch of 80-year-old dudes, like, talking about Bitcoin to each other. And I was like,
it's happening
Christ
everywhere at
here.
Once. But not on this podcast,
no.
because we're going to talk about some other games that we've been playing. You guys were very excited to talk about Versus Super Mario Brothers. Yeah.
Well,
like a 30-year-old, really, like, difficult version of a game that pretty much everybody has played, but a little bit different, but like a fun, like, little bit of trivia.
Well, not a lot of people have played the arcade yeah. game, right? I mean, the arcade game.
No, but a version of
Super Mario Brothers.
Super Mario
yeah.
Brothers with some changes.
Yeah,
with
some. It's basically just the arcade version of Super Mario Brothers, designed to. We talked about it probably like 5 years ago or something. Yeah, because yeah. we actually had one in the Shibuya arcade here.
We talked about it a few times,
yeah.
and there was a Waterloo for you. You were playing it. I wasn't really
yeah.
playing it because I was like, yeah, that just really doesn't look like much
I still
fun
have
to
this,
me.
I still have this goal of one coin finishing that
yeah.
game, and I haven't done it yet. But
wait,
Kyle,
someone has.
I
someone
raises
has.
His hand.
Well,
yeah.
this guy is like
oh,
a Mario
shit.
Like genius over here. Like, I don't know if you've ever watched him play
Mario
Brothers, and it was a little disturbing.
Really?
Yeah, he's very. He
can you finish Lost Levels on one life?
I've never tried.
You have finished it. I mean,
that would be really
times,
difficult.
But you have finished
so
it.
There's a there's a Mario bar in Tokyo.
Yes.
That I frequent. It's called Star Club.
Okay. Oh, it's called Star Club now.
Star Club. Well,
see, that sounds like something else.
It used to be called like.
But so it used to be called
Mario. Mario. But they said, please, could you change
Invincible
the name?
Mario, basically.
And I have the speed clear record at the bar.
Yeah.
And they had like the 10-year anniversary of this bar opening in June.
Is it still there in the same spot?
It's still there. Hasn't moved. Awesome. And I was like, Kyle, do one for, you know, show off. And I'm really good friends with the owner. He just says, show off, show him a good time. And I...
Really, it is one of those
guys. Goes down like a spangled dress.
Yeah, exactly.
I was in like a suit. And high heels. Like, oh, look at it. You think I'm going to die here? No, pasties. I got this. And then the owner, I beat it, you know, like really good, don't die, anything. And then the owner goes, Kyle, now you need to do that with Super Mario Bros. 3. And I'd never attempted that before. And I was like, okay, let me try it now. And I did it.
Nice.
Wow.
Without, you know, without a continue or anything like that.
There
so.
Had to be some World 8, some sweaty moments.
The double whistles.
Double whistle right to World 8.
Double
right,
whistles. Yeah. I got the thumbs all sweaty. I'm taking a drink.
Did you have some P-Wings for those airship stages? Or you
got a double warp.
Down?
You basically have no, like, items you can go in at that point.
Right. But you went in.
Yeah.
Because the wrong hand grabs you.
The wrong hand grabs you.
You're in.
I got lucky that time, and then I beat the next level without dying. So yeah, I'm pretty good at playing Super Mario Brothers.
Wow, respect. And okay, so now were you excited? So where? Because I saw people talking about this.
So this is as much as I wanted to talk about as the game itself,
from?
Which is that this game came out of nowhere. So Hamster does the arcade archives, right? They already put out Mario Brothers, the original 2-player Mario Brothers, which is a great arcade game, really fun, even now.
Just recently.
Recently, like a month
as
or
the
two
first
ago.
Switch, like this is the first kind of retro Nintendo game.
From Nintendo, yeah. They've done a bunch of other games, like a bunch of SNK games and Polestar and stuff, but that was the first Nintendo game, and this is the second. And yeah, it came out of nowhere, and there's no hype like from Nintendo or anything, like no marketing.
When did it even come out? Was it before Christmas?
Japan was right before Christmas, and then America was a couple days, like the next day or 2 days later.
Okay,
it's like
$8.
$8.
Yeah.
Okay,
but it is obviously it's the arcade, you know, perfect. It's the arcade version of Super Mario Brothers, which is like. Starts off the same as regular Super Mario Bros., but eventually, like, you know, you start seeing blocks that are different, and you're like, that wasn't there in the home game. And then, like, the further in you go, one-ups stop appearing, and then, like, you get to level 6-3. We talked about this years ago, but, like, 6-3 is the first level where there's, like, a blind jump. I mean,
yes,
you're supposed to go to the edge and, like, walk back and forth to make the other side slightly visible, but it's literally a jump that you have to run and jump into darkness.
Can't see anything.
And there's one part where you literally have to do that and land on a turtle and bounce off that to get to the platform. Like, so it's, like, really cruel. And it's obvious they were trying to get... It's like Lost Levels. Cruel.
And that turtle, it's a Koopa
it's a flying...
The little floating red one.
That one spawns in the right spot for you to bounce off it, I'm assuming, if you
don't
go in blind. Okay, you don't have to make it appear on the screen.
No, well, you have to walk up to the edge of the platform that you're going to jump off of and go back and forth a little bit to make it visible, because you can't
see it.
Yeah, you won't see it originally. Yeah,
no, but you won't see it, but it will always be in the right position for you to bounce off.
It will spawn in the right spot if you could do it blind.
Yes, but if you still have to watch, like, it moves up and down a little bit, and you have to hit it at the right... If you hit it when it's at the very bottom, you're going to miss the platform. Like, you have to actually land on it while it's in the right position as it's moving.
Yeah, exactly. But but what we're saying is you don't have to make it spawn and then get it the right timing and then jump. If you just jump blind, it will spawn at the right
spot. Oh, yeah, of course.
As long as you get the jump right, it'll be in the exact position for you to bounce off.
But it's cruel, man. It's like,
so at 6-3, that one was evil, and that was the one where you would get to almost every time.
So I finally mastered 6-3. And now my trouble is 6-4. I think from here on out, it's going to be mastering every level one at a time until I get to the end. But
what about latency? Any kind of weirdness?
Perfect. It feels really...
Actually, it feels amazing with the Pro Controller. I was shocked. I was playing it at Jake's place, it's
friend of the show, Jake Casnell.
Yes, and it's perfect. Like, I was... Because people complain about the D-pad on the Pro Controller a little bit, and I love it.
I really had an issue.
Responsive it
is. I wasn't a fan of using the Joy-Con little, like, button D-pad. I was
into
that. I did not really like that.
Of course, that's going to be garbage. Which is sad, because that's all I have. But
okay, like, via Super Mario Brothers, everybody knows he warped from 1-2, 4-1, 4-2, to 8-1, which you cannot do in
Versus.
That's
right.
But you can only go to 6.
You can only go to 6.
Okay, you can go to 6. Is the warp zone in the
same place? Yeah.
Okay.
Although there's, like, one of the earliest little, like, hints, like, this isn't the game you think it is in 1-2.
That's right.
You know, when you're running at the top of the screen above, like, the HUD.
Yep.
And you'll jump over those platforms. You're like, I'm home free now. I just have to run here. There's a gap.
And yeah, you know why that gap is there. I think that gap is there because they didn't want people to be able to go to Minus World in the arcade.
That's
game.
Probably
so they took out the block that you would jump through to get to Minus World. You know what I'm talking about?
No kidding. Yeah, of course. So you're just Minus World.
Yeah. Huh.
For me, I'm just on like autopilot. Like, all right, I jumped and I'm there. Oh no, I fell down. Like, I can't do it.
No, fuck you. You're
it's probably that too. But yeah, I think they also didn't just want to deal with Minus World.
Are there any other big changes, like late game changes, like the World 8 stuff?
There's a different ending.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the text is different in the ending.
Yeah.
And,
oh, that's interesting.
Mario's like suit is like yellow this time because they didn't have that in the in the NES palette, but they had it in the arcade palette.
I tweeted this out yesterday because there's the hue to Fire Mario is much more, it has a much more yellow hue to it, the sprite, than the console one. I'm like, what's going on here? It's very noticeable. And then somebody Jeremy Parrish responded and says, well, since this was the hardware that was in the arcade used a slightly different palette. And so there's slight color variations to a lot of the sprites in the game.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. But the big thing to me is just I'm surprised they're not marketing it. It's a Mario game. It's a classic Mario game. Like, I'm not thinking this is going to sell a million copies or something, but there's, like, nothing from Nintendo. No. And, like, Hamster does – you know, Hamster is a Japanese company, so the menus are all a little janky. Like, the English is kind of weird and stuff. But it's like, why would Nintendo not polish that shit up? This is your arcade history. Like, you should treat this with respect. You know?
I got, I think, Nom 75 on the Switch, like, right when it came out. Yeah, which I love that game. But, like – and it has a lot of robust options, but like somebody has to like slap Hamster around a bit in terms of like UI and like menu layout.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
that's, you know,
they use the same UI in all their games.
It's a big part of their job too. Is like, you know, of course, getting the game right is the most important thing, but like that's another big part of the job is like showing the pathway into the different visual options and like all the different stuff it has. It's like borderline doesn't make sense. I mean, it's actually difficult just
like
to
a text
navigate.
List, yeah, of like
yeah.
things you can
and it's
do.
Just like what advances and goes back, and it's just not bad, bad, bad user experience. So I'm assuming it's kind of the same deal with the with Mario.
Nintendo on Wii, they had the Wii like virtual arcade, but they never put any Nintendo games out.
No.
So is there some like kind of do they have to go through Hamster to release this? Is there some kind of like
I'm sure Hamster
is bandwidth. I think it's just the bandwidth thing. It's like let's get these guys to do.
Although
it.
I don't think we'll ever see Donkey Kong. We probably talked about this at some point too. But there's the weird thing with Nintendo and the different company that made Donkey Kong and all this
weird shit.
But I hope it would be awesome to see the arcade Donkey Kong someday. But.
And what VS Mario Brothers came out in September. Super Mario came out last week, and there's Balloon Fight
versus Mario Brothers.
Versus Mario Brothers.
Just had it. Note, VS. Don't call it VS. versus. Never call it VS again. I just want to let people get bad ideas. Like, we had this fucking talk about the Super Nintendo talk where SNES and whatever the fuck people call it or whatever. Latest and now. Versus.
The style guide. Versus.
VS, period. Okay, yes.
Did I say VS?
Say it out loud.
You keep saying VS.
Yes, it's Versus.
It's okay.
Sorry.
It's okay, we forgive you.
Go ahead, continue.
Balloon Fight.
Balloon Fight. Excitebike?
Maybe. I don't know. There's others coming.
An ice climber.
I don't know. I mean, so does a virtual console come out with regular home versions of these games later too? And
I feel like
buy them
this
again.
Point, maybe virtual. Well, we're still supposed to get that thing where you get a free game every month, and that hasn't happened.
That's tied in with the paid online service, which is still like nobody
Speaking
knows.
Of that, when, did I
oh,
see
has that
a
not
news?
Ever been?
Not, no, not out yet.
They've not talked about it.
Like, look at you. Did that not?
No. That is not what this is.
Was that a broke up? Stupid fucking. Thing
no.
That's right. That is kind
of. This is Mark McDonald putting words in my mouth.
But did I see something from like an IGN Italy or something saying that it's
no,
now...
it was Nintendo Italy who put on their website.
What did they say?
Fall 2018.
Oh, really?
It's since been deleted, but
right.
Huh.
So
it popped
so
up there for a
it
minute.
Was not
for
an official time. Thing. No. It was just it was up there for a second. Somebody noticed it, and then it came down. But saying that it was going to be free. That online was going to be free until then, right? Wasn't that?
They keep saying.
Well,
that.
It should
be
free.
To be free until it properly comes out, and so now maybe it would be next fall when it would actually.
Hopefully, by then they'll have actual real voice chat that doesn't require a stupid phone app. Yeah. But we'll see.
I mean,
oh, okay. Sorry, you just reminded me something about Monster Hunter World that I heard that I wanted to ask about.
What's that?
So you guys talked about a bunch about it last episode. We're going to talk a lot about it when it comes out, is
January 26th.
Two episodes from now.
Yes.
Do you have to have like a fucking friend code or something to join?
Only in the demo. This was stupid. This does not excuse it, but yeah, only in the demo. In the real game, you don't. But in the demo, for some dumb reason, and it's not like you know, the codes are like, you know, burger happy 25. It's like just a bunch of letters. It's like a password, like an encrypted password.
Like, it looks exactly like a fucking G.
iOS suggest a password.
The people that we were playing with, we ended up like taking pictures of the screen and sending it to each other on Twitter because that's like the easiest way to send. It's so stupid.
Okay,
but
that,
it's only,
thank God.
Only for the demo, but at the same time, they should be criticized for that because you are going to turn off so many people who think that's how it's going to be in the real game. And
well,
they're going to be like,
what
is this dumb bullshit?
Because I have friends who were asking me, I'm like, oh shit, I don't, maybe that's just the demo.
Dude,
but even as I was saying it, it sounded weird.
I wish you got the chance to play the demo though, because it's so good. It is good in the way, remember when we first played Try and we got nuts for it and like we were working on it during the day and then like playing it at night. Like it's like that level good. Like it's really, really good.
I need someone to walk me, to hold my hand and carry
me.
Because I've never
Padawan learner. Yes. Yeah. I mean, we have the fucking, the man. How many YouTube subscribers does Adam
like
have?
180,000.
Yeah. Gaijin Hunter. Yeah. Okay, yeah. He's like one of the foremost experts in monster hunting. And he will be with us.
You might say we created that monster ourselves.
We did. Yes,
so,
you did. For sure. But so many of the things that we've been asking for and talking about on this podcast.
For years.
And, you know, so many people... I mean, I'm going to wait till I actually play it and we get the final game to kind of, you know, put a cherry on top of this thought. But just preemptively a little bit, so many people were like, well, is it still Monster Hunter if it doesn't do Y stupid thing? And it's like, apparently so. Like, based on the beta, like, people are fucking losing their shit over
this. Have you seen some of the, like, images?
Game.
People are posting, like, these little, like, animated GIFs.
I thought those were, like, the opening cutscene. Like,
yeah, no,
like
they're not cutscenes. They're, like,
it's in-game.
Like it's so good.
I saw a really good GIF of a guy like doing a grapple hook off of a monster's back, and then off of a tree trunk, and then flying
and, like,
back on the monster
off.
And like knocking it out. or whatever.
Capcom Europe's community manager.
Oh,
yeah.
Was it?
Monster Hunter community manager.
He's great. He posts a lot of awesome images. Yeah, he's doing a really good job.
Yeah,
of hyping
badass.
Things up. Anyway,
all right. Resident Evil 7 DLC. Am I the only one who's played?
Probably, but I want to know about it. Like, is it related to the main game story, or is
it? So yes. Yeah, so this was a promised free, I believe. DLC?
Is this the Chris Redfield DLC? Or?
So there's two. Yeah. One is the Chris Redfield DLC, which people... There were a lot of, like, conspiracy theories. Let's do a spoiler alert right now.
Sure.
If you haven't finished RE7 and you really care about this stuff, I care about this stuff, and this was kind of a dumb little thing at the end. But anyway, so he shows up at the very end of Resident Evil 7 in the main game. And he's, like, working with Umbrella or whatever is Umbrella's new organization, which is like, what? Yeah, like, has he been brainwashed or what's going on or blah, blah, blah. And people who know more about the series or, like, watched all the movies or something probably know more about this. We should get CBX Freak on to talk about this. Because I heard people talking about this organization having been mentioned maybe in other games or files or something like that. The one that shows up at the end of RE7 apparently is, like, Umbrella making good now. I'm sure this will... What could possibly go wrong with that? But, like, no, we're going to be a good, like, corporate citizen now. We're going to work with the BSAA and the government agencies and whatever that STARS became.
Boy Scouts of America?
basically. But Chris Redfield showed up at the end and people were like, is it really him? Is it, like, Hunk wearing a mask?
It's Tofu.
Nope, that's, like, literally a thing. It's, like, wearing, a Chris Redfield mask? Like, look, here's, like, stubble comparison of him and his stubble, you know, from this game. So yeah, people had a lot of time on their hands.
Sure.
Resident Evil lore fans have a lot of time on their hands. But yes, it's him. That's what was happening. Basically, there is that one that is more kind of action based. Both of which you can play. So there's the Not a Hero, which is the name of the Chris Redfield scenario.
Did that just can't come out? Like, so these both came out at the same time?
Yeah, I think it was December 12th or something that. And then the other one is End of Zoe, which Zoe is the daughter character from the main story game. But so on the Chris Redfield DLC, that's a very much more like action-based game. But it's the parts that I played are set up kind of like a hub and spoke kind of setup. So you have a hub that you keep returning to, and then you go down this spoke go down, kill some stuff, get an item, come back to the hub, use the item to unlock another spoke off of the, you know what I'm saying, like a hub, think of a wheel.
Yeah, spoke.
Okay, I'm getting like no, like,
yeah, no, we know what,
recognition.
We know
here.
What you're talking about.
All right, so it's. But it which makes it seem more wide open. It seems actually pretty linear. Like you have to go down this spoke first, then it opens up this spoke, and okay. You could go that spoke early, but you get stopped really early because you don't have the night vision goggles, for example, or this, that, or the other thing.
Huh.
So they introduce some new enemies, which are okay. Or they're enemies that you actually kind of have to run from at certain points. There are enemies that kind of just regenerate. They're a new class of enemies. I forget what they're called. They're not the molded, which are the ones that were in Resident Evil 7 proper. But I played about an hour. I'll be honest. Like, that's what I kind of wonder now if the developers themselves know what was, like, so magical about Resident Evil 7. Mm. Like, because if I was them and I was adding DLC, it's like, okay, now I know what the best parts of this game are. I'm going to really fucking drill into that shit. But they kind of haven't. Like, the parts of that game that are really amazing are, like, going into an empty room. Or, like, I mean, it's the suspense and the horror and the atmosphere and everything about that. Punctuated by bursts of action that kind of keep you on your toes. But if it's more action, like, the game kind of bogs down at the end, kind of breaks down at the end, most people agree, in the last third, partially because the environments are a little bit repetitive and simple, maybe, but also because it just becomes kind of like a shooting gallery. And it, as well as that works, especially in VR, it's just not what was new and interesting and amazing and what everybody really loved about Resident Evil 7.
Did you play the... Is the DLC playable in VR? Did you play...
Both are.
And
both
did you
them
play
are
it in VR?
Fully playable in VR. Fucking course.
Who are you talking to?
I know. I just want to make sure.
I was playing with friend of the show, Ryan Payton, had two... He had a PS Pro and a normal PS, which I had never played on a normal PlayStation 4 before. It actually looked fine. I was surprised. Okay. Because the Pro looks really good. But... And so we had no... There was not a TV in the room, because you don't need one. We had to move it to
just
a separate room.
I have a... Ryan sent me a photo.
Yeah. So we were both playing, and then we both, like, shifted over at the same time, and then we had, like, an hour-long discussion about what
Wait,
we had
did
played.
Did you both start at the same point? And like
we did, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Yeah, so because we couldn't... And we had to have, like, the PS4 cameras, like, pointed, you know, away from each other so they didn't detect each other's headset. It was
right.
And the room was all dark, too. So it was like,
yeah. Anyway. I have a photo of... what could be you in a PSVR headset in a completely black room.
Nice. I had to play that launch day, the day it came out, even though now I'm excited to go back and finish it. Small side question here. Does anybody at this table have one of those PS4 sized Phillips head screwdrivers for the PS4 Pro? You do?
Is it different for the Pro than, like, stock?
I think it is.
Okay. Wow. I don't have a Pro one. I do have, like,
but you have
stock
a stock
one.
Because you switch out your hard drive or something?
I did that, and the thermal paste in my original PS4
oh,
was,
you had
like,
that?
I had an issue, so I had to fix that.
So
everybody had that issue.
I have a disc stuck in my Pro, and the nice thing about it is there's a screw on that you can access from the outside of the PS4 Pro and manually eject the disc. Mm-hmm. The bad part is you need a very, very specific, like, Phillips head screwdriver.
Why do you need to manually eject the disc?
Because it's stuck inside the PS4 Pro.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
That happens?
It's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God damn, man. This...
Anyway, okay, side joint. I'm going to check and see if it is different, okay. But I think
so. Your
think
disc
is
stuck in your PS4 Pro.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So
is there a way to, like, safe mode boot and just eject the disc without even turning it on?
No, I mean, it literally can't eject the disc. Is the problem? The disc has become, like, unseated from the presumably unseated
from the tray
from the
or
drive.
Whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so you have to manually make the mechanism, like, it's not triggering whatever. You can hear it, like, trying its best. It's in there, like, you're like, when you hit the eject button, but nothing comes out. Back to...
Are you sure, like, maybe little baby didn't get some peanut butter in there?
No, there was no, like, sandwich
try
inserted
to put
in the VCR. Yeah.
Some bologna in there somehow.
It was protected the entire time. You're like, user error was not any part of this. It was not user error. Thank you very much. So I forget why I digressed onto that point, but back to the Not a Hero. I am interested to finish that. I think it seems pretty robust, if nothing else. It takes place in an environment that is from the expanded off an environment in the regular game. It starts off in an environment you did go into in the regular game, but goes to a new one, like a new area of a area that you've been in the main game. Mm. The other end of Zoe, I have kind of the same criticism as far as like the wanting. I wanted more of like a horror aspect, much more like suspenseful thing, but. I will say what they realized, and I haven't seen any interviews saying this or anything, but I think what they realized was that Jack, so like the bad guy for most of the main game, the father, the guy you've seen, you know, he has that kind of like, welcome to the family. That guy, like people really like him. He's like a good character, and he's like distinct, and he's kind of unique. And so, like, previous DLCs, they had one where it's, like, his birthday party or whatever, but it's, like, a mini game. You run around and get him stuff, and you hear him, like, woo-wee, that's great birthday cake or whatever. But what they did with this was, it's like, well, okay, he's dead, so...
Wait, what?
Yeah, I did give the spoiler warning. Spoiler. There
that
earlier.
That guy died, oh my God.
So, but his brother...
Oh.
We never said he didn't have a brother. So if he had a brother that's kind of the same guy, that would be pretty fun, wouldn't it? And so,
what's
yeah.
What's his brother's name?
You're like a fucking hillbilly. I forget what his
like
name
Bill
is.
Or...
Cletus.
How could I forget? I'll look up what it is when somebody else is talking. But it's not like a quintessential hillbilly name. Because
okay.
It was not like, yeah.
Jonathan.
Yeah.
William.
But it was... so you were like... you. Punch shit. Like, you don't even... I don't even know if you get weapons
punch
in
rocks.
I've only played the first
Are they, is this a callback?
But you have... There's, like... It starts off in his cabin, and you go outside, and there's a punching bag where you can practice combos. But you just have his two fists, and he has, like, a big tattoo on one of his arms. Instead of health items, he gets bugs that he eats.
Wow.
He's a total fucking hillbilly. He doesn't look like it in the artwork, though. I think they could have had a lot more fun with how he looks. He just kind of looks like he looks like Santa Claus, like, went to the army or something. And, like, Santa Claus, like, worked the fuck out and shaved his, like, beard close in his head. And
got swole.
Yeah, big time. But you're just, like, coming up molded, and you're just, like, fucking punching the shit out of him, which is pretty fun. And then you're, like, stepping on them, and you're, like, punching and kicking, and he's, like... come on, get some! Like, here we go! Like, and okay, that part of it is pretty good. Like, that was a good idea. Like, that was fun instinct. So, there's also parts of the game where you carry another person. You carry Zoe because you're like rescuing her, and that's kind of interesting in VR.
Do you have to hold your hands out like
no.
or something? Or
no, it's
hands?
it's just being held there. Mm. But it's actually like it like felt. Heavier, you know, it's like that queer that weird thing that VR does where it makes you think, you know, like
yeah.
you're walking up to your neck in water or whatever, and you start to feel like your body starts to feel weird because it should be feeling like it's wet or something, kind of like that escalator not moving phenomenon. But part of it, you're carrying her, and I was like, huh, like that's really interesting, like this totally works, like it. You look down and she's like there in your arms and you're carrying her and you're like moving more slowly. And so like I thought that was kind of I don't know if they do much with the mechanic. There really wasn't in the parts that I played. You just couldn't attack stuff. You had to time your movement to kind of get past a few things. But so anyway, that's where I'm at with that. I was obviously super excited. I was really excited to see Resident Evil 7 showing up on a lot of Game of the Year, best games of the year lists.
Yes.
I kind of thought it might be forgotten. It came out so early. It's hard. It's almost a year ago that came out.
It was late
now.
January.
I mean, yeah. Nier came out super early. Nier was like March, and that's getting tons of
and Nier
recognition,
has been
which is
on
awesome.
All of those as well. Like, those were two of the games that I think have been on. Any personal games of the year that you guys are not seeing show up on lists that you want to give a shout out to or talk about? Anybody?
Not really. I feel like this year was the... I wouldn't put that anywhere near my top. But, like, this is, like, easily one of the best years ever. Like, I think if you look at from top to bottom, January to December, this is maybe maybe the best. Like, not even exaggerating. Like, the last one that comes to mind was like 98 when like Metal Gear and like Zelda, you know, Ocarina of Time and all those games came out. But like this year was just like nonstop amazing games all year long.
Well, there's 97 too. There's all the sevens, right? They were saying that it's like 2017, 1997,
I guess, but nothing as nothing in my memory as big as this year for me personally. And like part of that for me as a fan of Japanese games is that a lot of Japan like really kicked ass this year. There were a lot of really great games that came out of Japan throughout the course of the year. You know, you have Persona and Zelda and Mario and Nier and all these games, and like it was just like to the point where like amazing games are being left off a Game of the Year list that any other year would have easily been Game of the Year, but just because there's so much good, like Zelda. Zelda just makes it like it's so hard for anyone else to get recognition this year, but it's, you know, it's deserved. But
like
it's
seeing
crazy.
That and Mario head to head in the same year.
And they were both amazing. Like,
yeah, even just on the Switch. Well, something else. This is kind of a side topic, but something that this reminds me of is a lot of games came out this year for the first time for people. It's like that NBC, like, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. Do you remember that? They used to do that. It's like, you didn't play Skyrim? It's out now on VR. It's out now on PSVR, and it's out on Switch. It's a whole new game to a ton of people, and so I can't.
Hey, that was Undertale, right?
Like,
Undertale came out on
there
PlayStation
you go, Undertale,
this year.
Yeah, exact. Another really great example, but I keep having people with Skyrim specifically like, this game is fucking unbelievable, and it's like, well, yeah. Did you hear when it won like fucking 600 awards
5 years ago?
Everybody was talking about it. It was
6-7 years ago, I think. Actually, it's been a while.
But it's like, you know, in years like this, I think so many of these games, there's only so much time. Like, these games will come out on another system in like a couple years, and then we'll play them and we'll be like, holy shit, like Nier is fucking amazing. Yeah. And other people will be
that
like,
that EGM
no
cover
shit.
The Too Many Games is still comes back to mind all the time. That was probably the most like important video game magazine cover of all time. It was like totally
no kidding, that's every fucking year now. Like, it really is. Like, there are every week now. It's like, it's every week, you know. There used to be, even in, you know, 5 years ago, there were a few weeks in the start of the year, a few weeks in the summer.
Now it's all year long.
Even like around Christmas, there would be a week or two. Yeah, but this year was completely fucking bonkers. Case in point, I think,
on that point, like seeing Japanese developers and publishers see the explosion of the Switch so as a surprise. That means like next year,
not just Japanese publishers, everybody.
You see like Capcom and Bandai Namco being like, oh wow,
we're
really
gonna put all these resources
so
into Switch.
Please
now
be excited. It's,
I think
like,
it's
next
so
year's gonna be huge.
The Capcom is making another fucking Street Fighter. It's like, first you get one with two games for Switch, then you get one with 12 games. It's like, is there like one sitting back there with like fucking 20 games on it, guys, or something? Like,
we made new games just to put in this Street Fighter collection.
Exactly. Fan made games this time. But I mean, that was like, it's like, sorry guys, we fucked up on that two game thing. Really, it should have been this. It should have been this like 20 for
so
the 30th anniversary.
It again.
It's like somebody wasn't fucking thinking ahead. Did you guys talk about Mega Man last?
We did, yeah.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I'm excited for that. I think it looks good. It's nice to have a real
Capcom
Mega Man
has a lot
from Capcom
of,
Japan.
A lot of cool stuff in the works. Yeah. Back to what we were talking about the like embarrassment of riches in great games this year. Is this
Gorogoa?
So, like, that's something where I feel like kind of snuck up on people kind
of
at the end of the year.
I had no idea it existed until I saw the Chris Kohler's piece about it. He did like a feature with the developer, like kind of making up sort of thing or whatever.
Okay.
On Kotaku. It was pretty interesting. But
I saw, I think it was friend of the show, Nick Sutner, tweeting just like breathlessly.
Oh, it's
it.
A very Nick Sutner game for sure. Really? Yeah, super artsy. And I mean that in a good way. Like, it's just, but he, you know, he's very much into like kind of art house games or whatever. Like, it's a super artsy, like,
well, it's from
unique, interesting game.
It's from what's
Annapurna.
Her name? Annapurna, right?
Annapurna's kind of second game, yeah.
Cornering those types of games.
At E3, I went to their booth. They had like a media only booth, and because I'm friends with those guys, they let me in. They're like, yeah, just come play our games. We have like, they had like five games in there. My favorite of those was Donut County, which is coming out soon or is already out. I'm not sure.
It's not out yet, I don't think.
Which is also good.
Yeah.
But
that game looked really interesting to me. So that was shown off at PSX, right?
It was on, they had a trailer at PSX.
Yeah, they had a trailer at PSX. That game looked to me like, I've been waiting for a game that was either like a Katamari ripoff or a spiritual successor to Katamari. And that game, even though it doesn't look anything thematically like it kind of reminded me, maybe it's what I'm assuming that that game is. You move around a hole, right? And you basically drop things into the hole.
Yep.
But you can also like do simple puzzle solving based on what you drop into the hole, right?
Yeah, but I think, and that's, I mean, with my limited time with the game, I think that's the point,
that's
right?
That's the crux
twist,
of it.
Right?
Okay,
is that,
all right.
Is that it's not just get this big.
I see.
It's like open, get big enough to cause this stuff to happen that
right.
then unlocks things that you makes you able to continue to get bigger kind of thing.
Right. Well, but that's, and that would happen rarely in Katamari. It's like you're not big enough to knock this thing down,
right?
So get bigger. But
it's more along
stuff.
The lines of like there's a thing here that is in the world and it's not telling you to do this and you just sort of figure it out.
You need to like puzzle it.
Right.
Puzzle
like
it out
like
a
in
bit.
The trailer I think they showed like eating the campfire causes your hole to burn, which then causes the hot air balloon to take off.
Right,
which,
right,
you know,
right.
That kind of stuff. Which then allows you to pick up other things in the world. So.
Right. Yeah. And the visual style looked really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny,
I think
too.
Annapurna is like someone to keep an eye on because I played both of their games that are out over the last few weeks, Edith Finch and Gorogoa. I haven't finished
Edith Finch
yet.
Great.
Edith Finch is really,
amazing.
Really good.
Yeah.
It's just super interesting and different kind of storytelling, I feel like, and like it's not like a super complicated game or it's fairly linear. Again, I'm not done with it, but like
we talked about it right when it came out.
Yeah, but like what I've played briefly. Of it, I'm super into it.
I really liked it. I burned through it like really quickly. It was super fun. Yeah, I mean,
and I'm into this thing too of like games that aren't super long, because one bad thing about this year is that there were too many like 100-hour games, and that's like they're hard. It's hard for adults, if you're not in college or like 10, it's hard to play 100-hour games. So like,
John,
these,
come
like,
on,
six,
you're not
seven...
married, you have no children, you have nothing going on, you can just be playing games all day.
Yeah, how many hours did you put in Dragon Quest?
Job.
Fucking.
Well, you know, I make exceptions for like the very, very important ones.
Okay.
But that's what I mean. I got like one of those a year, maybe.
Yeah,
I can't do like five of them.
I get you. I don't even want to. That's why, like, Persona 5, it's like I started it and I was like, who am I kidding? Like, I'm not going
to
be able to put 60
hours
even into
this. I would love to play that game, but there's no
this.
World where I'm ever going to have time. I need to just, like, watch it on YouTube or something, which sucks. But Gorogoa is, it came out of nowhere and it's.
What are you playing it on?
I played it on Switch. I got it on Switch. It seems like it might be. It's on iOS as well. It's a touch based game, essentially, but I played it actually on the TV with the controller, and it's fine. It's a little, I mean, a little extra work. But
I heard
like,
people saying maybe the iOS version would be the one to play.
Well, it probably on iPad would be like perfectly ideal, right?
But like a pro or something like that. Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's like a, you know, you're doing a lot of. It's really hard to explain, but it's like you have. It's a puzzle. It's a visual puzzle game with a screen that has like essentially four quadrants, and you. There's different things going on each, and you're moving visuals around between them to kind of make new images or like unearth things that are beneath them to kind of like you can zoom in on these images. So a lot of these four different images, and you can like zoom in or zoom out or like interact with certain parts of them that makes things happen. And there's a story going on, and like I almost don't want to talk about it too much because the really interesting part about it for me was that it was unlike anything I've ever played. I've never played anything like this, and that in itself was super interesting.
So
but,
if you had to categorize it, you'd say it's a puzzle game.
Visual puzzle game,
But with a story.
Well, the story is not even... story is almost too much. But, I mean, there's a flow. There's a kind of... You're playing as this... or you're guiding this kid, basically, through the world to sort of... I don't even know what he's doing. He's like basically like gathering these like five color things. And really, so yeah, there's no story that's important, but like you are, there is a beginning to an end. There's like a flow, a logical
flow. There's a narrative
flow.
That's, I mean,
kind
of a normal puzzle game.
Yeah, they never tell
no
you what's going on. You see it, but it could be a different thing to you than it is to me. But I turned it on, and like 2 minutes in, I was like, I don't know what, because the game doesn't tell you anything. You have to figure it out yourself. And I was like, okay, this game is not for me. Like, I have no idea what's going on. I'm just like, I'm ready to quit. And I was playing with my girlfriend, and she's like, wait, try doing this on that. And I was like, what? And I tried it and it worked, and I'm like, oh, okay, so like this is a game that like different people are going to get different things out of it. And so together we ended up playing through the whole game, and like between the two of us it became really, really fun and interesting, because like I couldn't figure out some shit, but she was like, try this, and it worked. Or like she couldn't figure it out, but I was like, wait, let me do this, and it worked. And like it's a game with like a lot of experimentation, requires a lot of experimentation to kind of get to the goals, but it does that thing to you where when you do it you feel like a genius, or you're like, wow, like I can't believe, when really the game was kind of probably secretly guiding you all along, but it's really well done. It ends a little abruptly. It's kind of over, and then it's over, and then there's the credits and everything. But like, it was a good, solid, you know, 3 or 4 hour game. it's not that expensive. I think it's like 10 or 15 bucks. But it's just so different that I recommend people play it just because, like, it's
what unique. Made you buy it, just out of curiosity?
People talking about it. Chris Kohler's thing, and then I had recently... So Ian Dallas, the guy who made Edith Finch, has been in town. He's been visiting. And so we've been hanging out and talking about stuff, and, like, hearing his thoughts about games made me try Edith Finch. So I tried Edith Finch, and then I was like, okay, Annapurna, like, these guys are trying interesting things. And I saw that they made Gorogoa, and then so I tried that too. But yeah, it's really cool, and it's on Switch, it's on iOS, and I guess it's also on Steam. So
if it's on Switch, how does the docked mode play work? If it's like a touch focus kind of thing,
You're just using the it's kind of like you have a hand on the screen and moving stuff. You hold the button to move stuff, and you hit A to zoom in and B to move back. It's not hard, but I actually haven't played it touch at all, so it's probably much easier to play it touch. But yeah, it was fine. It wasn't like difficult or it made sense. You know,
nice.
Yeah.
Shout out to Annapurna. Those guys.
Yes.
Know what
exactly
they're doing.
Those guys, right?
Yeah. Sony Santa Monica folk.
That's right.
Definitely know what they're doing when it comes to video games.
They have a lot of cool, they have a bunch more games announced,
too. Bunch of unannounced stuff in the pipeline that is, holy shit.
Legit.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it seems like their purview is doing kind of new, interesting, kind of, not established genre stuff or IP stuff, which is pretty cool. What else? Anybody been playing anything else that they just... Burning half to talk about? Are we going to talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling?
Oh, man.
Django?
Well, Resident Evil 7 was Kenny Omega's game of the year.
Was it really?
Yeah, I just saw it today. I don't know if it was posted earlier.
Nice. I saw him. Actually,
that guy knows what he's talking about. Did he play in VR, do you know?
I doubt it, because he's always on the road. But,
he plays games a lot, though. And he knows his shit. He was super excited when he announced Cody for Street Fighter V, because he's like a Cody main in Street Fighter 4. Okay. But
Blaster Master, the Switch version, was like in the top five for me.
Really? Wow. I need to play that.
Every time I talked about Switch, I was talking about, like, oh, dude, Mario is looking great. Oh, Zelda, you're just going to blow your mind. I just want to play Blaster Master, man. That's going to be awesome on the Switch.
And wait, are you like hanging out with him? You just casually drop it? You're like,
Django hangs with all the big wrestlers.
I'm not going to play that game. I'm just going to say that since I work with them on the English side of their operations.
So talking about what you're doing there. I mean, that's something that I think a lot of people would
I'm
be
super fascinated
to hear about.
By this. I think it's awesome, like,
I mean,
side gig you got.
They're definitely blowing up in the West, and they're aware of it, and so now they're working towards having a proper, cool, nice, understandable face for the West. So we're working on localizing the content.
Django,
yeah, I'm going to be in the ring. Mean Gene Django.
You're the face of the West? Yeah,
Mean
exactly.
Gene Django, nice.
Got to get my mustache grown. But so I'm just helping them. It's not just me, obviously. There's a team of people translating, localizing a lot of their interviews and things like that.
Okay.
And then just as much as I can.
Social media and stuff.
Yeah,
and...
So I'm helping with social media, and then also at the events, like coordinating between the foreign wrestlers and the Japanese staff and making sure everybody understands what's going on.
Very cool.
That's cool.
So it's fun. I've never done anything like it, but it's kind of like how I got into games. I just decided when I came to Japan, I'm not going to work in an industry or do work that I can't connect with on a personal level.
Right.
And I used to like pro wrestling back in the 90s and stuff like that, late 80s. So I was like, yeah.
Are you an Attitude Era kid?
That and a little bit prior.
Okay.
So at the end of the Attitude Era, I moved to Turkey and my connection with pro wrestling ended. So I came back and I'm like,
they don't have like Turkish.
I bet pro wrestling in Turkey is some wild shit.
Oh, yeah.
They have some awesome fucking. I've seen some Turkish movies.
Well, dude,
I bet they have some fucking awesome pro wrestling there.
Their version of pro wrestling
that I would love to see.
It's two dudes getting oiled up in olive oil.
What?
What's his name
you
from?
Can say that. You can say that.
That's
the Turkish one saying this.
Fine.
Just but no, Hakan from Street Fighter V. I was surprised at how accurate. I mean, accurate in the sense that it exists.
Wait, that is a thing.
It is a thing.
Like Turkish oil wrestling,
but it's from like Ottoman times.
I have
no idea. It's hundreds of years old, so it's not like a main thing now.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is a thing. They'll do like a big fair every year, and in a big grass field. And
do they do that? like he does.
I love when I saw Hakan. I was like, finally! Like I grew up playing Street Fighter 2. There's a Turkey. Like I thought, how far could they go? They got India, Brazil. They got the whole world. I'm like, they're never going to be Turkey.
I watched, I don't think anybody else here would have seen this except for JJ, maybe Brad, Capcom Cup.
Yep.
Did you catch any of the top eight or anything?
So I ended up having to leave the Capcom Cup. I think I left it like during the losers final, maybe. So I saw pretty deep into it.
Dude,
yeah.
Dude, that I think is one of the best top eights. Fighting games that I've seen, and I haven't watched a really good Street Fighter V tournament. I don't know
if I've just been missing them or like that. That proved to me it was like, because early on some people were kind of poo-pooing like Street Fighter V, like, and like, it was fantastic.
Like, I think this year for me was the best year in Street Fighter V, like competitive play.
Yeah,
like even I mean, not just like I mean, Evo this year was, I mean, with Punk, it was
amazing.
Cool story, yeah. And like, it's finally getting to the point where people aren't just playing the same characters all the time.
Exactly.
And no, so there's massive like disparity between, oh, this guy mains this guy, this one mains this guy, and it's all viable. It even, all works. There's no like meta kind of.
Right.
And
even it's, characters who people are like, no, that character's not that good. And it's like, no. Then you meet a person who, and it's always been a good thing when there was a good fighting game, but it's just like, yeah, man, like fucking Birdie. Like, I mean, I was really glued. I thought, well, I'll just watch one or two or whatever. It was amazing, and like how it happened, and I'm not even going to say the end because a lot of people who listen to this podcast probably haven't seen it. I want them, and maybe don't even know the result, and it's going to be way better if you haven't. I'd encourage you, just go to YouTube. You can watch Top 8 out there. It's one. There's like one video that has it all. That's the official thing, and it's just, it was like nail-biting, really fun, great commentary, really, really highly recommended. So
nice.
Yeah.
Is Street Fighter V a go for Evo Japan? Was that still not?
Yeah, that's in there. Yeah. Oh, was it a question mark?
It was not announced.
Oh, was it not?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. It was not, and I don't know if it's ever been.
Okay.
What the fuck?
But I mean, that's where I see the Japanese, like, you know, player base kind of.
I mean, of the top 8, 6 of them, I think, were Japanese. I mean, Japan,
The arcade culture having gone by the wayside, I mean.
But it apparently doesn't matter that there's no arcade Street Fighter V, because Japan is still, like, dominating. Yeah.
That's a good sign. I also noticed, like, a lot of people now in, like, high-level competitive play are maining, like, playing with a controller.
Yes.
Like, not
fucking blows my mind every single time.
I know. I can't get
every single time they walk out there with the little fucking like DualShock. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, how the fuck are you like that? Ugh.
And
like,
then you watch what they do, and you're like,
if I had a button for a special move, like much less have to execute any kind of motion, I could not like do it on that kind of reaction timing. Yeah. Like, it's amazing. I'm sorry. I derailed the Japan pro wrestling talk, which I wanted to, because I wanted to talk a little bit more about it.
I think it's all his fault, because he started talking about oil wrestling.
The mean gene of New Japan Pro Wrestling. You need to fucking keep,
you need
us,
to keep us on track.
Yeah. You need to like steer it back into your wheelhouse.
They have a fan event coming up on January 3rd, right before the big Wrestle Kingdom. Oh, yeah. 4th.
Which is on January 4th. And you're going to that?
Hells yeah.
Where is that? Is that in like
Tokyo Dome?
At the motherfucking Tokyo Dome.
Oh, shit.
Big deal.
Oh, shit.
This isn't down the street on the garage.
All right.
Tokyo Dome. But at the fan event, there's been an announcement about the schedule, and a New Japan game announcement is included.
Yeah.
So a little bit of buzz.
A lot of speculation there. What could that be?
Very interesting.
But at the same time, Fire Pro Wrestling is still not out on PS4, but it's coming. And I mean, the PC version is apparently really, really good. Yeah. So.
It's still in early access? I'm guessing?
No. It's release.
Is it?
On Steam, it is out of early access.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So the next step is PS4, which will be a huge...
That's when I'm going to jump in. I can't wait.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what's your elevator pitch about what's so special? We've actually talked about it a couple times on the podcast before, because John is a fan as of this year.
Yeah.
But what would be your... like your sales, what's different about it, or like why is it like other wrestling, the drama and the like that kind of shit?
Yeah, I mean, it is pro wrestling, so there's drama, but a lot of that is conveyed in the ring more so than what I remember WWE, well, other people,
right,
how their stories are conveyed, the Western style. So I mean, the in the ring action, being able to tell a story, and then if you're coming at it without a Japanese background, I came from it with a little bit of Japanese, not pro wrestling Japanese.
Right.
So for me, it was more understanding, okay, what are these guys doing in the ring? Why are they fighting the way they are? And then the reactions of the, you know, facial reactions, everything nonverbal is conveyed so much better and so well in this style.
To me, it was the, well, for my like outsider, know nothing viewpoint, like a guy who saw animated GIFs on Twitter level of knowledge was like, I just see people doing shit that I don't see
people posting animated GIFs of Western wrestling on,
like, technically, like,
yeah, just like holy shit,
athletic...
that guy just like did like six flips and landed on this other guy's fucking head or whatever. Absolutely. like way more athleticism,
yeah,
or whatever.
And I mean, in general,
absolutely,
pro wrestlers are amazing athletes, and so yeah, they have obviously like a where they want to be. Like the Olympics is obviously for a normal athlete where they want to go, right?
Right.
New Japan Pro Wrestling ends up being now that kind of caliber. So guys from overseas, England, New Zealand, Australia, US obviously, everywhere. Now New Japan Pro Wrestling is something they want to experience and put on their resume.
It's like the end goal sort of thing,
yeah,
or at least
because they know
goal.
So it's because it's got like cred, right, as opposed to,
yeah,
WWE,
yeah,
or whatever, where it's like, okay, that's the big mainstream thing, but this is kind of the up-and-comer.
Yeah, this is where you can,
right,
get your reputation and as a proper, you know, well trained pro wrestler.
Right.
Well, that's a sort of what Japan has always been for,
yeah,
years. Like, you know, even back in the day, like people would go to Japan and make a name for themselves and come back to the WWE,
yeah,
and be like,
right,
and,
right,
and even though the mainstream fan wouldn't know who they were, wouldn't have any idea who they were, like they would be like, oh, this guy is supposed to be a big deal. And then they, like, I remember like the one that when I was still watching pro wrestling, like I remember when Chris Jericho came to WWE from Japan and people were like, this guy is like the new big thing because he does shit that no one else does. And he would come in the ring and he would do stuff and you're like, what is going on? Where,
yeah,
did he learn how to do this stuff? And so you start to think like, maybe like there's something going on in Japan that I didn't know about that's really awesome.
Yeah.
And now he's co-main eventing Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
He's fighting Kenny Omega, which is just going to be,
oh, is that the headline?
Huge.
Of the,
yeah,
it's kind of the second
Kingdom
main event, but because, yeah, the main event is the real champion, but
so
still.
What do you, just as a quick aside, what do you attribute it to? Is it because the trainers are Japanese and it's happening in a different way, or is like, like the laws more lax, or people more willing to hurt themselves, or
I mean,
like what is
it's
it?
National insurance, and so it's,
yeah,
if you get injured, it's fine.
It's like, yeah, exactly. It's like, fuck it, I'm gonna get my broken shit paid for.
I mean, there's world class trainers, I'm sure, in the West as well. But the tradition here is you go into the dojo, whether it's, you know, in the New Japan's case, they have a New Japan dojo culture where before you're an actual, let's say, well-established character in the pro wrestling arena, you're,
yeah,
a young lion, you're a kid. And
do you
like
scrape the toilets and stuff,
you,
all the sumo stuff,
all that
too?
Kind of stuff. I mean, and Chris Jericho talks about it in his book, and because he was in that culture when he first started in New Japan as well. But yeah, it involves shitty stuff like doing laundry for senpai, you know, washing the floors. Like,
it's kind of like sumo a little bit.
A little
sense,
bit.
The,
I mean,
yeah,
that
where
kind
you have
of
your stable and,
yeah, and I mean, it rubs people different ways. Like some guys just come into that going, "This is a crazy, you know, I'm totally against this kind of hierarchical structure." However they want to view it. So the people that can adapt to that, the Westerners especially, like Jericho,
Kenny Omega.
He came in from a different organization in Japan, but he understands Japanese culture very well, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And he has a huge, you know, like self-drive. So he pushed himself from a junior heavyweight class to heavyweight class. So he obviously has that same mentality. If you put in the hours, you put in the time,
right,
you'll see the results whether you will. It's not going to be like the next day.
Yeah.
You're slowly sharpening the blade.
I could see that happening, yeah, that being the Japan aspect, where, yeah, it's your life. It's not like something you go and do it for 8 hours a day,
right,
and come back. You, like, live there,
yep,
so you're always doing it.
So, I mean, that produces that kind of,
sure,
you know, quality in the ring. And so people that get a taste of it, experience it in Japan in general. I mean, just not just New Japan, other organizations as well.
Right.
They come out of it in a different, you know, they come out in the West, like you said, as a big deal.
So what if I am listening to this podcast and I live not in Japan, or let's say I live in Japan, and I just want to watch this thing, where would I go about?
New Japan World is their
website.
Yeah, it's the service they have for viewing live matches.
And you can buy a la carte, like I could just buy Wrestle Kingdom?
I think it's like, what, 10 bucks a month?
It's about
10
bucks
a month,
999 yen a month.
I get it.
So
okay,
it's less than $10 right now.
So you'd sign up for a month?
Yeah.
Is how you would do it?
Yeah, you just sign up for a month and you get...
That's pretty cheap for a pay-per-view event, and you get the whole
month.
And it
has everything in history.
It includes all the
archives,
too.
You can watch like shit from like the 70s. Like you can watch like Andre the Giant wrestling in Japan. It's amazing. Like, it's really cool.
How much do they have like a Monday Night Raw? Like, is there a weekly event as well?
So, I mean, about every month. Yeah. About every month there's a main series.
Okay.
And every week, maybe once or twice a week even, they'll have road shows. So they call Road 2, you know,
I see,
Power Struggle or whatever it is. And so those usually, I mean...
But it's piecemeal, different places, different nights,
yeah,
every...
Yeah.
Okay. It's not like...
Yeah, it's not regular,
where,
right,
it's every Tuesday, there's
no,
this
it's
one,
not
every Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not like Raw or SmackDown.
Interesting,
or
interesting. Okay.
So, and English commentary is always on the main event of that series at the end of the month, usually. So, I mean, you get a taste of, you know, what they're doing on the English side, and then before the main event, you can obviously follow the stories, because they do, you'll know what the main event for the end of the month series is in advance, but to be able to pick up on the nuances of the characters and see...
You got to watch all the sort of in-between and things
these guys,
that are going
these wrestlers,
on.
Sure. These wrestlers are definitely pros at subtlety, so I appreciate that.
What's the gap between, like, okay, let's say there's an event today, how long before that shows up in, like, English media?
No, it's you watch it live. It's
really?
It's there.
Oh, there's live English commentary.
English commentary is only on the big ones, but like, you can watch any match. So.
Okay.
Yeah. New Japan World.
Bringing it back to video games.
Yes.
Is there any speculation on what the announcement is?
I have no idea.
Because it's
I mean, I'm kind of assuming it's going to probably end up being some like janky gotcha mobile phone bullshit or something. But it would be awesome if it's a real game.
Right. I mean, what big wrestling? I don't know enough about wrestling video games to say, but I mean,
it is Ux. Only WWE right now. Ux, yeah.
Right.
So it's a good opportunity, I think, for anybody. I mean, FirePro is taking advantage of it now.
Right.
And now New Japan could also.
Sin Sophia needs to stop making those fucking style savvy games and get back to making WCW whatever. Remember they made the N64
oh,
wrestling games
were
that were awesome.
That's so funny.
It's so weird that those guys are making like.
But that is the same developer. All right. Well, maybe that's a good place to start to wrap it up. I say start to wrap it up because we're going to tack on an additional optional conversation.
Oh, God.
Where we're going to talk about The Last Jedi.
Oh, God.
But I do not want to put anyone through that who doesn't. I don't think it's going to actually be that long, but I don't know.
You just,
anyone
you just have things
take,
you need to get out.
Except for kind of John.
I kind of know what yours is. And okay. We talked about it.
And
so.
I'm going to guess what Kyle's is. But I am very curious to hear this stuff. This is kind of selfish for myself, but it's like, well, we're here. Let's just record it. But let's say goodbye now.
Okay.
Before we do that.
To put people, so we don't
and
put people through
really
it.
If you really fucking care, you can stick around.
For the masochists out there.
I would say in our Netflix corner, watch Wormwood. I just started it last night when I was like hallucinating from lack of sleep. And that, I think, made it more amazing. But
Wormwood?
Errol Morris. It's Wormwood. It's about, I'll give you like the elevator pitch. It's a, Errol Morris has made all these really famous documentaries. You're okay, familiar. It's not one of his pure interview movies, but it's kind of, at least from judging from the first two episodes, kind of half that, half dramatically reenacted, but it's like mixed in a weird way. And it's about a guy in the 50s who was like dosed with LSD by the CIA as part of their experiments with using it as a truth serum kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And he fucking jumped out of a hotel window and killed himself.
Oh, wow.
That's a true story.
Interesting.
That's the first, also like the first five minutes of the thing.
Spoiler.
So I'm not ruining anything. But that shit totally fascinates me. It's a really interesting story. And anyway,
it's on Netflix Japan, I guess.
It's on Netflix, And Netflix,
is it a Netflix,
it's a Netflix
original?
Okay. So it's on Netflix everywhere. Okay. Let's give people until 2 weeks from now, everyone, Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Please enjoy your holidays. Please be safe. Take an Uber. Don't drive. And listen and tweet at us at starting with you, sir.
Django, where can you be found on the Twitterverse?
At Django Bango, that's all one word.
Okay.
And you tweet about if you're interested in the Japan, New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, no, I tweet mostly about Chuhais, but
okay.
I don't tweet very
often.
What's the New Japan? There's a New Japan Twitter people could follow, right?
Oh,
do you know
New
what
Japan,
that is?
NJPW_global is
there you go.
English.
Cool.
Awesome.
I'm at Mark MacD.
Kyle, what about you?
Farm boy in Japan.
All one word?
Yeah.
All right. I am John TV.
I am Kazumatsuri.
And, so we didn't give the whole spiel because unfortunately JJ could not make
it. I can give some of it real quick. You can find us on 8-4.jp. You can find us on Giant Bomb, our second home. You can find us on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter at 84play. The Reset Era thread, yeah, is always a good time. And
like
it's active,
how
too.
I like how you're lifting your arms here as you lift.
I'm doing that. I'm Italian.
Drum solo right here.
How you doing? All that stuff. Like Mark said, we'll be back in 2 weeks, the beginning of the new year.
A fortnight.
Our episode 199, we're getting close to the big one.
Oh, shit.
200, which happens to be the day that Monster Hunter comes out.
Could not be more fitting.
We
could
it
be,
out,
yeah.
7 years ago.
That's right. That's right.
Let's do the math.
Yep. You called Ryozo. You were like, look.
We need to know this so we can start our podcast.
Oh, buddy, come on. You're killing me here. Let's make this happen.
For all of us, thank you for listening as always. And
yes.
Happy New Year. And now we're going to talk about The Last Jedi. So if you don't want to hear about that.
Yes, that's right.
Turn
until
your
2 weeks
dials
from
down.
Now.
Happy New Year!
All right.
5, 4
Countdown 3. To Spoilerville.
All right, Django, have you seen The Last Jedi before we dive into this?
No, but let me just say.
You start running now. Well, get away from the safe distance.
What was the Force Awakens was the first, like...
Okay, you're safe. You obviously do not give a shit.
There's no spoiled turkey at all.
You guys spoiled that one for me when I was working as an intern.
Oh, we did? Oh, okay.
So I didn't care then, and I don't care now.
All right.
Han Solo dies. You're like,
he was waiting to watch it until you guys spoiled it for him.
I will tell you, there's a scene with Kylo Ren where he kind of gets oiled up and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Back on board.
You start wrestling.
All right, so let me just start off by saying, so I know you liked it.
Yeah, well, he's pointing to me, by the way.
Yes.
But I just want to say...
I literally forgot there were even microphones here, because I don't even give a shit. Anymore. I just want to have this talk.
I just want to ask you to not Godzilla this, because if you do, it's going to be hard, because I know I already see where
Godzilla
this is going.
This? What do
you're
going
to just fucking do your breathe fire on how horrible this movie was.
No,
I can see it coming.
Dude, you misunderstand.
All right,
I'm
all
not
right.
going to do that. Right.
You're coming from a place of love.
Lies.
I'm not. Okay. I'm guessing you fucking totally loved it.
He's pointing at Kyle.
He's pointing at me. Yeah, okay. I enjoyed it.
Brad, I have no idea. I don't know if Brad... I have no fucking idea what Brad's hot take is on this movie. I'm curious.
So...
let's start with you.
Yeah.
I like Star Wars.
Yes.
I don't fucking worship it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. I think it's fun.
Same.
Like, blah, blah, blah. So... I don't have any preconceptions or, whatever.
You did not see it opening day.
I did not. But...
why did that happen?
Random, business trips and shit
that. See, that to me says something, though. Because me, too... And I was just other shit, and then my brother's birthday, and we were going to go see it. So I was like, okay, I can wait a week. It's going to be annoying. I'm going to have to avoid stuff. I would normally see it opening day. I'm guessing you would, too.
Yeah, I tried to get...
I'm not going to fucking book trips around
I tried to get tickets on opening day. I couldn't get them, and so I'm like, okay, fuck it, whatever.
Okay.
I'll get it when I have time to watch it.
All right.
But I did blocks in Twitter, keyword blocking.
I put in 30 fucking blocks.
That's half the reason.
The Last Jedi.
That's half the reason why I need to see
stuff
on the
beginning. I'm
going to call out
friends of mine who I know listen to this podcast.
Do it.
Stop dropping your fucking hot takes about what you think about the goddamn movie a day after it comes out. Especially motherfuckers who saw it before it opened to the public.
The worst.
You motherfuckers, you privileged assholes.
Yes.
You privileged fucking assholes.
You know then that they're not doing it to share their view.
No.
I saw Star Wars.
It's a fucking humble brag.
I just want to say this thing.
Hear
other people say. So, but the weird thing is, I so effectively blocked out.
Well, it was
everyone.
It was people that I thought were
cool.
Okay,
they'd
this
cool.
guy is not. I mean, he's a cool dude. He wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And then it's well, when I saw The Last Jedi, I thought.
Or do you want to make it's better we don't? You can put him on blast if you want to.
No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that.
Tell me later. Tell me after the podcast.
Guys, can you just hurry up and spoil it for me? So, what about this movie?
I don't think there's no.
There are some fairly.
Kylo Ren.
Kylo Ren
dies.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could spoil stuff, I guess, like the last movie, but not. Yeah, there's not a. As easily a big spoiler in this as there was for that one. I mean, you could.
Yeah, they're totally.
Nothing about Luke?
I mean,
even. Okay, let's get into it, because this is
all right.
A touch.
Wait, so let me
yes,
finish.
So, your take.
So, I went in not really necessarily caring one way or the other. I just wanted to see a new Star Wars movie because I like the universe, blah, blah, blah. I like the characters, yada, yada, yada. There was some dumbass shit in it, for real.
Yeah.
Mary Poppins and shit like that was fucking stupid.
Lip Leia coming back
fucking
to the
Frozen Space Princess.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
And so funny because I didn't even, that wasn't even a thing to me until somebody else said it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that was fucking stupid.
Although, did you see the part, someone tweeted about this, and I didn't catch it, but someone tweeted it, that when she's Mary Poppinsing her way back into the thing, she blows through a hologram of the dreadnought or whatever, which is exactly the same way that what's her name hyperspaced into the like a little bit of foreshadowing.
Oh,
so
God.
I'm like, okay, but still dumb. Also the casino thing,
that
point,
was really
it, got
okay.
it was like point
pointless.
Exact
pointless.
Exact thought of the casino section was okay, I'm not against going to, a casino world, even though that's kind of like a fucking Buck Rogers TV show from the 80s setup.
Yeah.
Or like a bad Star Trek The Next Generation episode. But I'm going to be okay with that. But,
the lack of imagination shown there.
Why are they drinking champagne?
Like, yeah, it was like a normal beer. It's not Vegas.
Come on! Like, everything, it's like, oh, everything's gold. That's our crazy take on it. And it's like, not instead of horses, there's like
Trico dinosaurs.
They're riding Tricos.
Some fucking Dr. Seuss. They were riding fucking Tricos. but like, the lack of imagination, I mean, I don't even remember, there wasn't even like, you know, what kind of crazy games are they going to be playing?
Yeah, no. They're playing craps.
Right. Yeah, and it's like, what? And like, the Star Wars bar from the first Star Wars had a way crazier, more interesting, eclectic, with like the $20 that they had to spend on Brother
Even
Mass.
Even the Force Awakens bar was actually way more interesting. This, now that you mention it, like, they could have done that approach and made this way more
even
interesting.
Even the guy that they were meeting was like the most forgettable.
He's like fucking James Bond.
Although he was wearing a nice Star Wars suit, I will say that.
Well, you need to get that suit.
I'm going to cosplay, obviously.
So, like, I've since like caught up, and I think a lot of people criticize that section because it doesn't go anywhere. Happens, which maybe is a fair thing as well, but I mean, that was kind of weird. But
that was a whole. It seemed like the whole point of that was just to set up White Lando, right? Like, they basically had to have that guy who was like, you know, the
Hispanic Lando.
Well, whatever he was, you know. And my point is, like, he was just there to be like the Lando of this movie. You know what I mean? Like,
it's I sold you
the guy who sold you.
What's
out?
What's his name, Kyle?
The stuttering DJ. Thing, dude.
His name is DJ.
Yes.
His
name is DJ.
His name is DJ.
I don't.
How do you spell DJ? Is it at least a weird spelling?
It's like
D-H-I.
The letter DJ.
Jesus fucking Christ.
That stutter was fucking stupid, too. Like, what was the point of that? Like, there was it didn't go anywhere.
He's such a good,
like,
actor, though. Why am I blanking on his name?
Benicio del Toro.
Yeah. I was like, oh, man. Okay, he's in here. Here's what I will say.
I thought he was playing his character from Usual Suspects.
Right,
He put like a cool, like, dark Lando, though. It's like Lando had an arc. He realized he did something bad. He sold his friends out. He's like, I'm going to make this right. But this dude was like, fuck you. I got paid.
I feel like he's going to come back in the next movie, though, and like,
maybe he'll have
good.
A long,
like,
arc.
Presumably, there has to be some fucking reason for him to do that.
Yeah.
But
the other main, thing that I've seen since after having seen it, reading what people had problems with about, was that it was more like modern, like, in the sense that there were like jokes that felt out of place in the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
But I didn't have any problem with any of those.
Really? I was fine with that.
Like I will say that, you know, the opening, like, you know, I'm waiting on hold for Hux, like, that joke was a little bit, it went too long.
That was my
but it was fine.
My perfect example.
Although the one that the other thing that I saw people say that they didn't like, that I thought was super badass, was the when Luke walks out and he just like brushes the fucking dirt off his shoulder.
That was great.
And I was like,
I squealed in the theater. I was like, fucking
I can attest this. He was like,
I was like, literally like, holy shit, that was awesome.
Yeah. So
that to me at least is an example of something where it's like, okay, you're within the boundaries there. You're like on the line, but you're there.
Sure.
Whereas, like, yeah, I do think that the humor, like, they like milking the tits of the whatever animal.
Just
animal
to call back to
you,
the milk,
like,
from his aunt and uncle's house or whatever, like, that was dumb.
But
that
and it's just like the animal just like looks at you like, well, it's a living. Like, what the fuck? Like, what is going on? Like, what was that look?
You kind of felt like he was trolling fans with
that. I expected that animal
to trolling fans when he throws. He's trolling fans when he throws the lights over.
So that was good. I really liked
that. That was crazy. There were like gasps in the theater.
When he did that, I was like, okay, this is not what I thought this is going to be.
So
that's what he said in the movie.
What I will say is that
I think it is
the first movie for my money. Like, adhered way. It was basically a remake, which upset me, I guess, more than anyone.
Well, perhaps by necessity, it was a remake. But
I had to recontextualize Star Wars
by necessity. Like, you don't have to. You could just make a fucking good movie and win people back. Like, the maybe safe, like, you know, Disney shareholder way is to, like, okay, let's just like remake the movie, the first one, because we know people like that. Okay. And I would hate for the feedback out of the second one to be like, oh, you went too far away from the formula, because no, fuck that. Like,
that's
appreciated that they, at least this one, besides, like, so the opening scroll starts And my only thing I'm coming into this movie is like, just don't be fucking like Empire Strikes Back. Be Empire Strikes Back. The scroll is like, oh, the rebels are like on a base and have been found, and the Imperials are on the you fucking sons of bitches. So
even after the scroll, just to give you my Star Wars nerddom, like the scroll pans up and it fades to black, you know, it doesn't have space, and the first musical cues that plays is the exact same musical cues from Empire Strikes Back.
Are you serious?
And I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like that 30 seconds into this movie and they're already calling it back. But that was basically it.
The logistics of the bombers and the bombing run and like why that was a good idea.
About the thing in the salt planet, or what are you
escapes me, but I'm not gonna get like that far into the weeds. It was the bombers looked cool, looked cool,
bombs dropping in space.
And if they're fucking getting magnets
they
on
apparently
them,
have some they have some like technological excuse for it.
So why the fuck do you need to fly them in on a ship that goes slower than like my fucking dead grandma's wheelchair to fucking drop them in? I mean, who on those ships was like, cool, I got the fucking bomber assignment, awesome, because I go at like fucking 10 feet an hour and I'm full of bombs, like in a ship full of bombs, awesome, that's fantastic. But I'm not even going to get into that shit because
after yelling about it for 2 minutes.
No, but I don't. If stuff like looks cool enough or whatever, and I'm not like fixated on it, it's not such a big plot point. I'll give you like wide berth for doing something new, because I was like, okay, it's not something I've really seen in Star Wars before, and it did have some dramatic moments. But like, so the setup of the ship being like just far enough out of range and like
slow chase,
like I don't need much, like I want to believe, just give me some fucking excuse. You have any excuse that you can write in the fucking universe with space magic and all this shit. You have all kinds of reasons why, you know, to have a ship that they can't get to or whatever, but like they over-explained it and in a stupid way at the same time. It's like, how does that make sense? Did that not bother anybody else the entire time? It's like, you know what? Let's just follow behind it for like a day, 30 hours.
Until it runs out of gas.
It's going to run out of gas. And then we will fucking blow it up. It's like, wait, really? How about you fucking like light speed into like 10 feet in front of it? Or how about any of another million ships that the Empire has? Like, you
Mark,
know exactly
Mark,
where
that's not how hyperspace works. You should know that.
It was born out of necessity. Like, why does this movie start like 20 minutes after episode 7? Like, put a year down the road and the rebels
You had to pick up with the Luke thing, right? Because he's
going to throw it on his shoulder. It was literally a cliffhanger, like, which is kind of like,
I mean, you could, if you wouldn't have had him throw it over his shoulder, I mean, you could have done that in like a flashback or something, but you could have done
I'm really curious about that. I would love to know, someday this has to come out, but I want to know, like, is that what they were thinking when they finished that movie?
It
bothers me that there was not a, like, the thing that made the first three movies good is there was a pretty clear plan from day one how this trilogy was going to form.
Star Wars, like the episode four, Kyle probably knows better than I do, but like, I thought that Star Wars, the episode four was like, from beginning to end, like, well plotted out, and then there wasn't any plan past that until Star Wars became a hit, and then he just sort of was like, but in the back of my mind,
but I mean,
thought,
you just said like, it yourself, episode four, like he had a nine episode like
layout. But episode one through three had nothing to do with what Lucas, like, I don't think.
No, it did. I mean, I don't think it ended up exactly how he originally thought it was going to be, but he definitely had like, details. Yeah, exactly.
Have,
it's like,
he had, like, this happened, but there was no like concrete outline.
But I don't feel like they have that this time, and that worries me.
They don't.
Like, I feel like you gotta have that if you're gonna make a trilogy.
Because in the interviews I've seen with the director Rian Johnson, he said they gave me carte blanche to do whatever I wanted.
Yep.
Which, I mean, I kind of agree with.
But you want the director to have, but at the same time, I mean, want there to be, you know, things planted that pay off later.
Well,
I
feel like, I feel like they looked at what they did. Disney looked at what they've done with Marvel, and they were like, okay, let's hire really good directors that make really great, like, indie movies and give them the helms of our major franchises and tell them that they can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
which worked for Marvel because they spent 10 years building that.
Right.
And they're like, oh, but Star Wars has been around forever, so it'll work. But it doesn't work when you're building a new trilogy.
Right.
Like, when you're introducing new characters. Like, yeah. If you did a Star Wars movie every 4 years, and in between you did, hey, here's Rey's movie, here's Kylo Ren's movie, here's fucking whoever's movie, right. And then tied it all together in a Star Wars movie, that would make sense.
Right.
But you can't just have, like, rando director number three roll in and do, oh, I just...
That I think you're right.
I did my take on Star Wars.
Yeah, no, you need some kind of...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you need some kind of, like, basically, like, fluid, like, you know, like, flow from the first movie to the third movie. That all makes sense. It needs to be speaking the same
language. I wonder if they'll do something like that. Or, like, I mean, Rian Johnson's, like, they're going to go past the Skywalker saga.
Well, he's making a trilogy.
They're making
it,
like, a new, like, basically Star Wars universe, basically, for the new trilogy. So,
well,
maybe
it's not a new universe.
It's in Star Wars, but
I
want
to bring it. I'm grabbing it with fucking force power and pulling it back to The Last Jedi, because, I mean, what I want to understand, I mean, I'm not just saying this as like a rhetorical device. I really do want to understand how people like that movie. Because
which one?
The Last Jedi. Because it seems like such a mess to me, such a like mishmash of some good ideas, some interesting ideas. I mean, I do think if you could have sold the conceit about why, you know, it kind of reminded me of like the remake of Battlestar Galactica where they have to keep warping away. It was like, oh, that's like a new... like plot device that I haven't seen before, but they sold it in a way in that show. Like, you could have sold that. I do think that that was an interesting idea, but there were so many things in this movie that just felt like false starts or dead ends or things that didn't ultimately go anywhere, or like the setups to have a big like set piece special effect or whatever. And it's just like, things were not earned, you know, like what's her name knocking Finn out of the beam weapon that's on the planet at the end.
Rose.
Like,
that was fucking stupid. That was one of my most...
Yeah, and then she does it and kisses him and then faints. And it's like, come on. Like, come on.
So, and that wasn't even like, there was no build up to that or anything.
There's no chemistry.
Stupid.
There's no...
I didn't feel anything.
Romance.
No.
Also, that whole scene was one thing that bothered me a bunch too, because all of his
came out of nowhere.
Not just that part, but also him deciding to like basically sacrifice himself to like stop that thing. Like after all this other bullshit he did, all for Rey, everything is Rey, mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden he's just gonna go kill himself and not get a chance to see Rey. Like I feel like that character who did all these dumb things before would have found some other dumb thing to do than to just ride his fucking little dumb ship into the fire.
And let me ask, what was, so when they set out,
they wasted him. He was a great character in the first movie, and like I feel like in this movie they just like dumb shit.
What was the like internal logic? What were those people thinking that got in those rickety ships? What was the goal there?
I guess like we have nothing else to do but to try this.
They weren't buying
Hail Mary.
They weren't trying to distract people. They weren't trying to do anything. Well, like what did they leave thinking they were going to do? Because I mean, they could have done it. They just turned away though. Like nothing happened.
That Luke was coming. So
I don't know. Exactly, they didn't. It's like what? And then so back to my original thing about like, fuck, these fuckers are gonna do Empire Strikes Back, and then they didn't do it. Although at the beginning it is the rebels like exiting a planet. And then they go down to a fucking planet. It looks like it's fucking snow, and there's a trench, and they put the fucking ad-ats
there. Was like
people.
There was a shot for shot.
Come
at certain
on.
Points. It was like
people like, and like, oh no, it's salt. Okay.
I thought
man.
It was
it's
snow.
Different.
Oh, thank you for telling me.
Oh well, it's something. It's totally new now because it's salt. It's not snow. And like, oh, the AT-ATs look more like gorillas now than elephants. So that's new. You did good on that. It's like, why? Something that also disappointed me about it is, like, even the prequels, is fucking dog shit as they are, had, like, new designs, had, like, new things in the Star Wars universe.
They did a lot of that.
Looked like they belonged in the universe. And I'm not talking about just, like, the early stormtroopers and it's like, oh, and here's... Because they're doing that now.
Ships and
but that's
stuff
all
too,
they're doing. Is, like, oh, here's the later version of something you've seen before. It's like... Where's the new shit that we haven't seen before that still looks like it belongs in the universe? But they have, like, the greatest concept artists literally in the world. And what they're doing is shit. What they're spending them on is stuff like that fucking casino planet and stuff like the AT-ATs, which, like, okay, that's cool. If you had to remake an AT-AT, I guess that's not a bad way to go with it. It looks more menacing and whatever. But, like, why do you have to remake... AT-ATs, like, does every single thing have to be a callback to a previous something that already existed in Star Wars?
Well,
like,
and, you know, like, after fucking seven movies, has the Empire not learned that AT-ATs don't work? Like, have they not figured out that they should come up with another idea?
They make for badass toys, like, man.
I mean, they look great.
They made an amazing toy. Yeah, that's it.
I think it's interesting that you seem to approach this from a, like, well, I see you, like, trying to find the logic in a lot of things, and that's totally understandable, but, like, I don't, like, I'm realizing this now talking to you, but I think I, like, am more interested in the sort of moment-to-moment things that happen. And so as long as... Because what really bothered me about the prequels is just how much fucking dumb dialogue and stupid fucking shit there was in those movies. Right. But, like, this movie, I came out of the... So, in the movie... I guess this is my take now, but, like, during the movie, I definitely squealed, like, five times. Oh my God, there was some amazing shit. Like, there were five or six scenes in that movie that just blew my mind.
Like, fan service stuff? Or at what?
Well, like when Rey and Kylo like,
that
go
whole
on
scene?
Dude, that whole scene. I don't even want to say
the Force, like, stab that guy with the face. John was going crazy.
When he cut what's his face in half and shit. Like, that whole thing was just, like, masterfully done. And that whole fight was amazing. And I was just, like shaking. And I think the end, too, the ending, the last 10 minutes of the movie are great. Like, it ended on a good note, I felt like. But, I agree.
Wait, last 10 minutes
stuff with Luke,
of the
basically,
movie.
Like, well, I'm sorry. What happened to Luke is I think, lame. Like, at the very end happened to Luke, like, what he chose to do or whatever.
Also,
but, like, that whole scene with him and him baiting Kylo and all that was great. And,
What about the slave kid thing? That was the very end.
Well, people read into that more than I think they were meant to, but that was just meant to say that, hey, there's going to be a future resistance. It's
the resistance
not
lives
or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Through the next generation. So people are like, Broom Kid? Is Rey going to train Broom Kid in episode 9? Like, that's...
those kids, that moment wasn't earned, and so it didn't land. Like, those kids didn't have a meaningful interaction.
I almost feel like their scenes probably got cut, like,
to
the point
where...
Like,
that was supposed to be
something.
He did
say there's, like, a bunch of deleted scenes, but what I'm realizing is that, like, for me, the moment-to-moment stuff, as long as it doesn't, like, super offend me, kind of gets the job done. And so, there were parts of the movie that I really didn't like the casino and a couple of other things. The space thing really bothered me, because it doesn't even make fucking sense in our world. Like, why would that make sense in their world? Like, you would be fucking dead in 15 seconds. Like, she's dead.
Well, she could have hold her breath.
Yeah, she fucking
she
was in the freezer. That doesn't happen. Like,
the force.
What the fuck, man.
That's so funny because, like, this is the one.
I actually literally went and looked up on Google. Like, I was like, Google, like, what happens if you're in space? It's like, okay, not that. Basically, it's like, but you know, like,
midichlorians protected her.
I think my ultimate conclusion is actually I can't judge this movie until I see episode 9. I feel like what they do from here is going to determine whether this movie was shit or whether it was good.
See, to me, and, like, I, you know, if you guys, the problem with me with this movie is, like, I don't expect any, like, you know, great action movie, Aliens, Terminator 2, the early Star Wars. I don't expect them to make 100% airtight fucking logic, okay? Mm-hmm. I really don't.
Sure, you gotta have some willingness to...
Suspension of disbelief.
That's what I was looking for.
I'm there. I'm already a fan. I'm, like, gonna meet you more than halfway.
Sure.
As long as you don't, like, slap me in the fucking face with it, then I'm gonna fucking go along with it. But I felt this movie at every turn was just smacking you in the fucking face with it, which is just like, why? That was such an arbitrary reason to inject drama in it. Like, you know, the whole thing, and now I know it's a thing. Like, I feel douchey even bringing up stuff when I know that there's a giant, huge, very douchey part of the internet that shares some of these thoughts or that are using it for, like, a different... you know, reasons
you
to
started
shit
the petition,
on this movie,
didn't
but
you,
like,
Mark?
No, but, like, the idea of her having the Laura Dern character having a plan. Kyle, what's her name?
Admiral Holdo.
Okay.
Wow.
First, you don't have her first name? Come on, Kyle. It's
probably Laura. I don't know.
Laura.
Diane.
Try to come
Twin Peaks reference.
No.
Diane.
But, like, you know, it was just like, really? So that was the whole thing, is she did have a plan and just didn't want to tell this guy because he was a jerk or he was lower rank or whatever.
That was
and
all
so
weird.
He does this whole fucking mutiny and, like,
I felt like, actually, like, that whole scene, that whole thing, like, I felt it could have, like, been pulled off way better and made a lot more sense if she just, like, fucking pulled rank on him. It was like, yeah, like,
it made
him, like,
more of a,
hey,
thing. Like,
you know what? I'm
up.
Admiral,
yeah,
and I have an idea, and you don't pay attention to what I say. So fuck you.
Exactly.
Get the fuck back in your X-wing,
like,
and get out of my face.
Sell it. You just gotta sell it.
Exactly.
Like, on paper, I think this movie, if you like had the 10 bullet points of stuff that would happen, including even like, you know, Luke is an asshole actually and like no longer believes in the Force or whatever, that sounds really good on paper to me. But like in execution, I just felt like it wasn't like pulled off. Like, well, I kept doubting things.
You know, there's all those like those the interview with Mark Hamill where he was like, I didn't like the way they took my character. This isn't my Luke.
He came around and
he's walked that back.
Well, but that's because Disney was like, look, we're gonna not pay you like hundreds of millions of dollars.
You show up as a fucking hologram in the next movie, asshole.
Yeah.
You wanna fucking cash that check?
Yeah.
Like, go back and tell him how much you fucking loved the final movie. Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, like, but it's not Luke, right? That's not the Luke from the trilogy. It's not the Luke that we've been used to, but that's not a bad thing. Like, it's fine to, like...
I agree.
And I actually like...
I agree.
I like the direction that they're sort of trying to go with the Force, and that it's, like, it's not the fucking midichlorians, let's retcon that out of existence.
Yeah.
But, like...
Trying to raise the beer off the table, because I can do it, too.
But, this sort of idea that, like, it exists in all of us, and, like, there is a weird balance of dark and light in everyone,
right.
And that, you know, it's up to the person... or whatever, to sort of make the decision which way they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that Rey seems to be the balance now, like, because she has both in her at the same time. And, like, I assume that's where they're going to go with Kylo,
right? All these things on paper,
And I like the way they executed them in general. Like, I think, like, the direction that it's going, and maybe kind of what John said, like, in episode 9, if that's the payoff, if there is this sort of, like, everyone has a duality and, like, you know, that sort of thing, and that's where, like, Rey and Kylo go, then I'm like, oh shit, this actually all paid off, it all worked and it made sense. If they go in some rando direction in episode 9, because J.J. Abrams is the director of 9, right? Who knows what the fuck he's gonna do.
I know, remake Jedi,
as much as I generally like J.J. Abrams and the stuff that he's made, I do feel like some of the humor, maybe that's not fair to attribute it to him, because I don't know where the fuck that's coming from, but it did seem to me like any time there was a good dramatic moment, it had to be undercut with a like joking wink and a nod. And like, so like in the Marvel movies do that, and I think they generally pull it off, and every once in a while they will have one that's just a good dramatic moment and it just stands on its own and it's totally earned and it's not undercut. But like, that's why I think people who complain about it not feeling like Star Wars, or the humor not feeling about Star Wars, I think are complaining about that, is because, you know, there was always humor in Star Wars, but it was not a device to undercut the dramatic moments. Like, every time something happened.
Well, it was always used, like, in the way to, like, build characters, right? Like, it made, like, Han Solo quipping or whatever made Han Solo what he was.
Right.
You got a feel for him as a character because of the humor that he used or whatever. Like,
right.
It wasn't used as just, like, a throwaway plot device or whatever.
So, who liked it the most? Kyle, John?
Probably Kyle.
You liked it a lot.
I don't know.
How many times
lot,
have you seen it?
I've just seen it once.
You can be a super fan here. There's no,
I've literally
like,
just only seen it once.
This is a safe space. Position.
I want to see it again. Everybody says like the second time was a lot better. You saw it twice, right? Or did
no,
you?
I've only
everybody
seen it once.
That I've talked to has said it was much better the second time than the
people
first time.
People said that about the last movie. I wonder with this one.
I'm going to go again on New Year's when movie tickets are cheap. But I'm not going to go as hard as it with Force Awakens. It's like, oh my God, there's good new Star Wars in theaters. And I saw it multiple times in the theater.
Well, now you've had a couple years of it in a row. But like, did anything, I'm curious, was there anything on your first viewing, before you saw the internet talk about it or whatever, was there anything that bothered you about the movie, or what was your favorite
really
on the other side of it?
Busy and messy a lot of points.
Right.
Like, so much is going on constantly that I wish that it was just more like kind of streamlined.
Mm.
It's a long-ass movie.
Yeah.
It's too long, for sure.
Yeah, it was longer than I literally thought it was going to end when she made, like, the jump to hyperspace and the shit blew up. I did not think it was going to go down and have that, like, 30 more minutes on the planet.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, what the fuck? Really?
Or
like,
maybe,
we're going to do this?
Like, when Luke's standing in front of the AT-ATs, I'm like, oh, are they going to cut now? Okay, I'm going to leave you hanging.
That
for
would have been shitty if they would have done that. But I feel like, so I wanted to talk about, you mentioned the Luke thing earlier. Even that, I feel like, is, like, they did it that way. They did it the way that, okay, the AT-ATs don't kill him and Kylo Ren doesn't kill him, but he still dies. So they could have their, like, oh, Luke dies is a big thing in this movie, but they don't just have to give you what you expect of the moment. And it's like, why? Like, what was the point of that? Why didn't he just go?
I just think they did it poorly, because I think him dying and the way that he died, it was very clearly intentional, and it's obviously a throwback to Obi-Wan and Yoda. He died in the same way they did. Like, he basically disappeared into a little thing. And that's
to buy them time.
But they didn't, like, set it up well. So, like, when it happened, I didn't even know what was happening. I was like, wait, what's going
juxtapose,
on?
Like, juxtapose, like, how Obi-Wan died, and I don't want them to do it the same way. I'm not saying that at all. But juxtapose how Obi-Wan died in the first movie with how he died, and it's just like, I don't know if it's the how it was shot or whatever, but it was just like, okay, why is he disappearing?
I felt like it would have made way more sense if the moment that he walks out the door, like, everyone in that base were like, let's get the fuck out.
Exactly.
He's here to buy us time, and then cut to Leia being like, oh shit, and then like he disappears, right? Like, then it would have made sense. But if it's just like, it's let's hang out in here, maybe he's gonna beat him, I don't know. He's Luke, you know.
And it's more meaningful that way, and it's set up like a, you know, I'm not against complexity. I like things to be more complicated than spoon-fed, and I like things to subvert expectations. I think that's great. But just many times with this movie, it felt like there were some good ideas that were just really, like, executed oddly, and the whole thing really just felt to me like a mess, like a hodgepodge thrown together thing. And I'm not even, like, really thinking about certain things, like, you know, people could just take off from the ship, like, they kind of come and go as they please, kind of, from the well, not come and go, I guess they only left, but like when they went to the casino planet, it was like, wait, you can just leave, like, anybody could just go.
And none of the guys from the First Order were like, maybe we should shoot. Nah, fuck it.
Maybe it's fucking Princess Leia flying out of that thing, and she's gonna, like, fucking make up the whole resistance somewhere else, or like, well, whatever.
Anyway,
yeah,
it's funny because I think is this Mark Godzilla-ing something here?
No, this is good. No, I think we this is handled. Handled
I care the least about this movie. I'm positive, and yet I've sound, I think, the most
because I feel like I'm in status or something. It. Like, I really feel like I need to see where it goes from here before I can ultimately decide whether this was good or not. I mean, I liked it. I definitely liked it. I didn't like. I don't mind a lot of it.
I had some really, like, great effects, some really great choreographed scenes, like, really good action sequences. They just weren't in service of, like, you know, it's always so much more exciting when it's a really cool, great action sequence that's in the service of something you really care about.
Sure.
And I didn't really care about much of it, you know. Maybe Luke at the end. I mean, I still kind of care about Luke, even though he was, like, a really, like, an asshole. And I don't think they did the, like, gruff asshole teacher thing very well either. Like, well, he was just kind of a...
The one thing I didn't like about him too is I don't the character that we grew up with, I do not believe would have turned into a person who could have done what he did, what he was going to do to Kylo. Like, that was not Luke. Like, he would not have tried to kill him in his sleep or whatever. Like, just no. Like, but beyond that, I thought everything about Luke besides the titties thing was pretty good.
Wait, I didn't see that. What titties are in
whatever that thing was.
That moment seemed like a real, like, oh, in the, like, split second that it crossed my mind to kill him, he happened to wake up and see me and that thing, and that's the whole crazy misunderstanding.
If only I could talk to him and explain.
Like, that seemed a little too...
And then,
like,
he had to kill all of my Padawans. And burn my temple and destroy everything that I own.
Anyway, left to say that didn't get covered?
I liked how Yoda showed up. I thought it worked. That was all right.
Real Yoda.
But Yoda didn't feel like Yoda, right? Like, even Yoda's humor and Yoda's the way.
I liked the fact that he was like, oh, you want to burn that? I'll burn that shit down. Like, I thought that was.
I thought the line "page turners they are not" was kind of, like, weird. Like, that doesn't sound like Star Wars.
Exactly. It's like, what? Who's writing? Come on. Who's fucking writing this shit? I don't know. Yeah. Anyway. So hopefully, I'm not going to, like, piss on anyone's enjoyment of something. Like, if you enjoyed it, I am fucking jealous. Good. If you had your disbelief suspended, awesome. Like, I don't want to hate on anyone's parade. But, you know, you guys who I know personally, I'm just like,
I didn't walk out of it like, fuck, that was like a steaming piece of shit at all.
No.
Really? And I didn't walk out of it like, even like I walked out of Force Awakens being like, what the hell? That was the same movie. Was that the same movie? Am I crazy? Was that the same movie? Like, and I felt like a crazy person because nobody was just saying it was a remake. Yeah, that was a remake of fucking Star Wars. And yeah, there was a Death Star again. If there's a fucking Death Star again in the next movie, I'm sorry. You don't get just one movie off. Like, but you know, it was one of those things where I was just like, what is going on? Like, a lot of weird false starts. Maybe they'll get it. Maybe. I mean, I am very thankful at least that it was not just adhering to the formula. I really hope that they don't take that out of, you know, what people are saying about the movie to, like, you know, like, oh, well, I guess we have to go back to Return of the Jedi, and there's going to be, like, you know,
furry creatures.
Exactly. Like, I'm just wondering what the new fucking Ewoks are going to be.
Okay, Ewoks. I did not think the Porgs were that offensive.
The Porgs.
They were just background dressing.
They didn't really get in the way.
Yeah, that was fine. And that seemed to me like an old Star Wars thing. Like, when it was then it was there with Chewie, like, going like, brr, or whatever. That was all right. That was fine. Fine moment.
I will say that, like, after watching The Last Jedi, would it sort of like afterwards? I was thinking about it. Like, it made me realize that, like, as a child, like growing up, like Star Wars was like such a huge influence on me. Like, it was just like the main pop culture thing that revolved around. But at the same time, I read like a shit ton of Marvel comics, mm-hmm. and like I loved Marvel, and I loved X-Men, and I loved fucking Avengers. And Iron Man was one of my favorite characters. And so, but once the Marvel movie started being really good and started hitting, like, Marvel was like this, they felt like more like topical and less like legendary than like Star Wars did. Star Wars mm-hmm. was like this thing that like, created when I was a child and like I grew up with. But like with The Last Jedi, I realized like, oh, you know what? Like, in terms of like the movie, like, you know, pop culture, cinematic, whatever, I care more about Marvel now.
Right.
Like, I don't, Star Wars is not what it used to be to me.
Well, and the thing to me that the Marvel movies show is that you can do right by the people who are the hardest core fans. I mean, I'm sure there are people who criticize the Marvel movies here and there, but like, by and large, what those movies have said to me is like, you can make like a, you know, a movie even critics will like, but a movie that you don't need to know anything about the stuff to enjoy, but also at the same time that
if you're a hardcore fan,
that appeals to the hardcore fans, and then also is not a movie you feel like you've seen like 600 times. There's not like Paint by Numbers is not following like a pat formula. Like, those Marvel movies, some of them are fucking amazing. Like, I'm gonna say like the word masterpieces, because if you told me here's 30 fucking characters you have to work into this movie in a way that is going to, you're going to make a good movie. It's going to feel like those characters were in the movie, but it doesn't feel like they took it over. It doesn't feel like a fucking hodgepodge mess. Like, that is a fucking impossible job. But they do it like every 3 years, basically. Like, almost every 2 years.
I mean,
it's pretty amazing what they built.
If, like, when I was a small child, you know, when I was like 8 or 9 years old, if you had told me when I was an adult, like, I would give more of a shit about a Black Panther movie than I would about a new Star Wars movie, I would have, like, been like, you are fucking crazy.
And yeah, here we are.
But here we are. I saw The Last Jedi. I'm like, eh, okay, it was good, whatever. Yeah. But, like, I'm all about Black Panther.
Right.
Well, we'll have our Black Panther spoiler cast in a couple months or whatever, because we got to wrap this up.
If you
we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, thank you for...
Oh, you have a lot of work to do. I don't have shit to do.
Yeah, so stop talking. So,
thanks for sticking with us this long.
Yeah.
And yes, if you liked this, I don't know
why would you would
want, but anyway, tell us why we are right or wrong, or don't. That's okay, actually. I think I probably got
it's probably better
enough of the internet talking about. Although, I need to read more reviews, because I actually haven't read that much.
Me either. I need time
about
away.
Other people's takes on it. But
I do want to see it again, though.
Same.
Interesting.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. Yep.
All right,
see
y'all.
See you in 2 weeks. Thanks.
Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year.
Let's go out with something really hot for these folks. A big hit out of 77. Ah, Star Wars. Nothing but Star Wars. Give me the Star Wars. Don't let them in. Ah, Star Wars. If they should buy wars, please let these Star Wars stay and pay. How about that nutty Star Wars bar? Can you forget all the creatures in there? And hey, Darth Vader in that black and evil mask, did he scare you as much as he scared me? Ah! Star Wars! Those here in Fire War! My seventh winner up here! Star